Are you searching for the best in online black radio? Then go to blacktalkradionetwork.com, helping you filter through the noise. Real talk, black talk.
The internet is full of half-truths and all-out lies. We've all seen them, and many people on social media complaining about it. Here's your chance to show and prove. WorldAfropedia.com is a black-owned and operated encyclopedia. There are several thousand articles, but we need help. We can't uncover all the truth ourselves. So please, join us and become a writer, editor, or blogger for WorldAfropedia.com today. Every little bit counts. We owe it to the future generations to put the truth out there. Visit WorldAfropedia.com, the African-centered encyclopedia, a global database of African knowledge for the purpose of bringing about global African wisdom and understanding. WorldAfropedia.com.
Kentucky's Worker Safety Agency has a lot of problems. That's according to a recent audit by the Federal Occupational Safety and Health Administration, or OSHA. The report says the flaws in the program have, in some cases, been fatal. From the Kentucky Center for Investigative Reporting, Eleanor Klibanoff reports.
On what would have been her 43rd wedding anniversary, Lisa Hobbs stands in the front yard of Camp Pius, the farm handed down through her husband's family for generations. She watches as the very same dump truck that killed her husband rolls down her country lane. In December 2016, Pius Gene Hobbs was raking gravel with the Meade County Public Works crew when dump truck number 225 backed over him. The driver then accelerated forward, hitting him a second time. Hobbs was crushed to death.
Okay, let's hear that one. No backup beeper. No backup beeper.
More than a year later, when Lisa Hobbs sees that same truck, number 225, reverse, she hears how nothing has changed. On the day of her husband's death, both an eyewitness and a state trooper said the truck's backup beeper was not audible. Hobbs might not have heard the truck coming. But Kentucky Occupational Safety and Health said the beeper wasn't a problem. That was after testing it on a quiet street hours later. The same inspector failed to interview the sole eyewitness and overlooked possible worker safety violations at the work site.
Well, these shortcomings are very concerning.
Jordan Barab is a workplace safety expert who ran federal OSHA under President Obama.
Identifying the causes of these incidents is also vitally important because otherwise the employer doesn't know how to avoid the next incident.
Gene Hobbs' case is not the exception. In fact, it's the norm. That's according to an annual audit that federal OSHA conducts of all 28 state-run worker safety programs. The most recent audit of Kentucky, which covered fiscal year 2017, was sharply critical, depicting an understaffed, under-resourced agency that's failing to protect Kentucky's workers. Federal officials specifically criticized how the state investigates worker deaths. In a statement, the Federal Department of Labor said it's working with Kentucky on a corrective action plan. Barab said the feds have the authority to take over state-run programs that don't meet federal standards.
Having a state program is a privilege, not a right of the states. And certainly it requires the states to address rapidly and seriously any problems that are identified by federal OSHA.
The Kentucky Labor Cabinet declined to comment. But speaking to WKMS Public Radio in April, then-Labor Secretary Derek Ramsey explained how the state approaches companies about possible worker safety violations.
We're going to educate, and then citate.
Without a really strong enforcement unit, these voluntary compliance assistant programs are not going to be able to do the job.
Laura Stock is the director of the Labor Occupational Health Program at the University of California, Berkeley. She said what's happening in Kentucky reflects a national trend. Republican Governor Matt Bevin's administration has been strongly pro-business and anti-regulation. When Gene Hobbs was run over by a dump truck, Kentucky issued no violations or fines to his employer. A state worker safety supervisor wrote in an email that Hobbs walked behind, quote, an apparently completely compliant dump truck, backup alarms working. The supervisor added that Hobbs, quote, just zigged when he should have zagged.
We know that's not the truth. It's not the truth.
Federal OSHA agreed with Gene Hobbs' widow, Lisa. In a report, the agency found that the state failed to interview the eyewitness, missed possible worker safety violations, and hadn't done enough to test the dump truck's backup beeper.
We're not the only one. There's a lot out there.
Kentucky Occupational Safety and Health investigated 44 deaths in a two-year period. According to the federal audit, there were serious shortcomings in a vast majority of those investigations. For NPR News, I'm Eleanor Klibanoff in Louisville.
I've seen what's around the corner. I've seen what's over the horizon. And I promise you, you niggas have nothing to celebrate. And no, I won't get there with you. I'm going to Canada.
Up first, though, I want to go back to some really interesting news that happened at the beginning of this year in like February. You may remember us talking about this on the show. It was a really interesting story at the time. The government of Ontario did something very surprising. It said, we are, for the time being, not going to suspend any racialized public service, servant. So if you work in the Ontario Public Service and you identify as a racialized worker, you cannot be suspended. Now, there were exceptions to that a clear case of wrongdoing such as theft or violence against another staff member. That obviously, when somebody does something like that, if it threatens somebody's safety, the moratorium did not apply. But other than that, no suspensions for racialized workers. The interesting thing about this happening was that the government never said why it was doing this at the time. But we know from some excellent reporting by Vicky Machama, who at that time was with the Toronto Star. We know from Vicky's reporting that there have been just countless complaints of wrongdoing, of harassment, of discrimination in the workplace among racialized workers, particularly Black workers, and particularly, I must say, Black women who are in the Ontario Public Service, talking about being discriminated against at work, telling stories about being treated like they were cleaning staff at work rather than members of the public service. Stories about people being fired while they were on sick leave. Racial discrimination, racist comments at work. This is what the reporting on this and many, many workers' testimonies tells us would be the reason why. And we have to know something was wrong, right? Because even though the government didn't tell us why it was temporarily stopping these suspensions, it was kind of admitting by doing that in the first place that something was wrong. Now, the government promised at that time that it was going to not just stop this moratorium or do this moratorium, on suspensions, but it was going to review its policies. You know, it was going to review how it deals with discrimination in the workplace at the Ontario Public Service. That was February. It's November now. It's almost the end of the year. And there's a completely different government in office. So a couple of big questions are, what happens to the government's commitment now that there is a different government? What happens to all of the workers who have been fired from the Ontario Public Service, who have been suspended unfairly, had their wages taken away from them, have their lives altered, need therapy and counseling, need all kinds of support, are ill, have physically become ill because of discrimination and harassment at the workplace that their employer, the government, never dealt with? What happens to them now, even though there's a new government, even though there's a new regime? How do we make sure that those workers get what they need in order to have a safe workplace, a workplace where they thrive, a workplace where their skills are acknowledged? There's a meeting that's coming up on Wednesday. That meeting is going to be from 3 to 6. So Wednesday is the 28th of November. The meeting is from 3 to 6 at the Grosvenor YMCA, which is 25 Grosvenor Road near Yonge Street. Many of you know that downtown YMCA location. From 3 to 6, there is going to be a meeting, and many of the workers that I'm talking about in the Ontario Public Service who host this event, they are going to be discussing this. They're going to be talking about what we do now. How do we move forward? How do we get justice for workers? And I bring this up because I think that the conversation could go in a couple of ways. One way that I know the conversation may go is having to do with something called the Anti-Racism Directorate. The Anti-Racism Directorate is a thing that the liberals created. It's an arm of government. It wasn't very well funded. It didn't have the clearest of mandates. And now I think that this Anti-Racism Directorate, which was the place people were looking to for things like justice for these workers, we don't know what its future is going to be. But I actually think that the Anti-Racism Directorate was never enough. And you've heard me criticize it before on this program. It never had enough funding. It didn't have a direct enough mandate. All ministries in the Ontario government have to be committed to anti-racism. An anti-racism directorate that's poorly funded can't substitute for their need to do that. So we actually need something better. And it is a scary time in the province of Ontario, because what is the province actually doing? It's removing oversight. We've just seen the removal of the Child and Youth Advocates Office. I spoke with Erwin Elman on the radio station last week here at News Talk 1010. An oversight for environment was also removed, as well as a liaison for the French community. So we actually are living in a time where the government is removing oversight, and we actually need more of it in the form of whatever the government does with the Anti-Racism Directorate. I think that criticizing it doesn't give you the excuse to get rid of it. It actually needs to be enhanced. But then the other question is, I think, about all of these workers, that I'm talking about, who are suffering the effects of being discriminated against at work and no one doing anything about it. The fact of the matter is, you can't actually ask the management who are discriminating against their workers, because you see, this is what it's all about. It's about not admitting that that's what's happening. That's why when the government put its moratorium on suspending racialized workers, it didn't say why. The reason why is because management in the Ontario Public Service is targeting particularly black women in the public service for really harsh treatment, suspensions, life-altering like sanctions at work. So how can you ask that management then to like within themselves solve the problem of discrimination when they're the ones who are engaging in it and causing their workers to go home ill, causing their workers to go home without pay? How can you ask them to fix the problem when they are the problem? It's part of the discrimination, part of the way the discrimination works in the workplace, as far as I learned from these workers when they talked to me. And by the way, I wanted to have somebody on to talk about this on the show today. And workers in the Ontario Public Service are so scared right now that no one wants to come on and talk publicly about the problems of workplace discrimination. That's how bad it is. But from what I've heard from workers, this is what they say. One of the ways discrimination works is that it prevents people from moving up in their workplace, even though they're qualified, despite the fact that they're extremely qualified, more qualified often than the people around them. They don't actually move up because of discrimination. Well, if you're going to have expertise in now creating a workplace that is free of anti-black racism and free of discrimination, you actually need to promote all of the people you've been discriminating against and let them do that, because they are the experts. They are the ones who have experienced this. And that, ironically, is the thing that I think the government is most reluctant to do, but that we need to push them to do. People in the Ontario Public Service don't just need restitution for facing discrimination. They need to be promoted. They need to advance for all of the lost time of this discrimination affecting them and their careers, and they need to implement these policies to make the workplace fair, because no one would know better than them. Listen, I got to get something off my chest right now. Like, you know, we're talking about harassment earlier, and sometimes I think about the way that power works, you know, and the way that harassment and bullying works. And I just want to share like a quick anecdote about like something that just made me think, you know, because there's somebody that I have to be around for professional reasons in one part of my life that I don't like, but I have to be around this person. So what I did was, a while back, I sent this person a message being like, yo, I don't talk to you anymore. So when we see each other in public, don't talk to me. I don't want any interaction with you whatsoever. And I just wanted to be clear about it, because, you know, sometimes you work with people and You don't want to be their friend and you don't want anything else from them, but you have to be around one another. And so you make it work. But I just want to make it clear to that person that, like, I don't want any extracurricular nothing from you. Since I did that, this individual now makes a point every time they see me of saying something to me. They go out of their way to do it. And I just want to point out, like, when we talk about harassment in the workplace, we talk about bullying and stuff like that. This is how this stuff works. That this person knows that their interaction with me is unwanted, and so they force the interaction on me whenever they see me in a guise of being polite and just being friendly, even though they know I don't want to talk to them. This is how people exercise power over one another and try to harass each other in workplaces and in social spaces when they feel like they want to dominate somebody and they're having a hard time doing it. These little bullying tactics that people use, it's real. And I just wanted to, like, call that out with my own experience, because, like, I know what that feeling is like to just want to be away from somebody. And because of their own prejudices and their own personal problems, they feel the need and the desire to harass you and make it all about you and obsess over you. And that's just a real thing that we deal with, you know, but talking about it makes me feel a little better.
Context of white supremacy. Gusty Renegade in for another broadcast, hopefully to share constructive information on the system of white supremacy. Today's date, Friday, November 30, 2018. So I have been told. This is our weekly broadcast, Neutralizing Workplace Racism. Any non-white person in the known universe, if you are listening to this here broadcast and you have got yourself on a job in a position where you are not mistreated, you don't have to worry about being a racialized male, racialized female. You don't have to worry about being suspended. You don't have any of those wacky problems about not being promoted. If you need time off, the holidays are coming up. If you want to take the whole month of December off to do your Christmas shopping, write it down and it's done. If you have figured out to get yourself in that position, your seat is never moved. You get the same nice, cushy office desk area until you decide you don't want to work anymore. Please, I am begging, call. You should be the very first person. Let us know. How did you do this? We would like to replicate your prosperity. I'll say it that way. 641-715-3640. The code 564-943-pound. Press *61 if you would like to participate. Number again, 641-715-3640, the code 564-943-pound. Press *61 if you would like to participate. Certainly, always we encourage, if you are having any problems in the workplace, any sort of incidents, and you would like to just hear perhaps a counter-racist assessment of your situation and or suggestions on how you can go about solving problems without creating new problems, definitely dial in. We will give our view. 641-715-3640, the code 564-943-pound. Press *61 if you would like to participate. As always, you can drop an email as well. If you're not able to dial in via the phone line, you can drop an email untiljustice@gmail.com. untiljustice@gmail.com. I will read your thoughts, or if you have your own views, or if you have a question, we can read it on air and you can get a response. As always, you can listen to the live broadcast at Black Talk Radio Network. Just click on the tab for the context of white supremacy. You can dial in and listen via the phone as well. You can also listen at TuneIn. Just look for the context of white supremacy page at TuneIn. I've tweeted that Facebook did all that good stuff. And you can always listen live at those outlets. Before we get to some of the folks that called in, that first segment that was talking about worker safety in Kentucky, and I think that was a white person that died, Mr. Hobbs. I think that was a white person that was at NPR, and they had a photograph of the widow, Mrs. Hobbs. They had a photograph, and I think that was looked like someone who would be classified as white. So I think that was a white person who died. But I played that because in a system of racism, white supremacy, black lives do not matter. As such, when we're on these job situations, and it might seem a lot of times that we're mostly talking about office type work situations, but certainly not everybody who listens to this program, certainly not all non-white people, are in office settings. A lot of our listeners, we have a lot of folks that are doing construction, doing work outside, doing carpentry work, lots of driving, trucking, Alabama victim, big victim in Alabama. Lots of folks who are not necessarily in office settings who might be doing work that might be a bit more dangerous than just, you know, sitting back in a chair in an office and worrying about racists leaping out to scare you or moving your desk three or four times. Take your safety as the number one priority. Do not think that these whites are going to follow the rules and regulations because they are concerned about their niggers on the job. You should not think that way at all. Take your safety. You should be the person that is most concerned about your safety and making sure that, hey, I have all of my fingers, toes, everything intact when I got here. And that's the way that I want to be when I leave the job for the day and when I leave this company permanently, retirement or moving on to whatever else I want to do with my time and energy. But really make that a priority. I thought that was so important. And especially, again, this is a white man that the truck backed over. That's what they were talking about. The truck, the reverse beeper didn't work on the truck, so you couldn't hear if it was backing up, and they think that's what happened, how he got backed over. Twice they said the truck ran over him, but this is a white man. Now, they said in the report, no fines, didn't find any fault, the beeper was working fine, you know, we didn't see an issue with it and all that, and just, you know, unfortunate accident, we'll just do some more educating and move forward, hope it doesn't happen again. And then the manager said, in quote, she read the email. This is like official workplace conversation that's being had about a fatality on the job. They're not talking about, you know, the no good Bill Cosby or Tiger Woods or, you know, whatever other nigger that we want to talk bad about. We're talking serious about a workplace fatality. And he said he zigged when he should have zagged. Man, I lost it the first time that I heard that. And again, this is a white person. So, I mean, you know, not trying to encourage having disregard for life. But I mean, wow, like a fatality. That's the report. Can you imagine? You're the widow and you read the official company exchange on your husband's partner's death. And it's zigged when he should have zagged. Wow. I can only imagine if it had been a black person. Again, you should be the person. Take your safety. You are the one. Number one priority. I'm looking out for me on this job. Just the callousness that I had more to say about that. Just I could not believe it. Moving forward. The next segment, that was Desmond Cole, black male. We played many segments before. Does outstanding black journalist. He has been doing his talk radio program and writing for some time, mostly frequently about racism, white supremacy in Canada. He was talking about workplace racism in that segment. First of all, words are very important. Racialized. That word was used in The Man Knot yesterday, Dr. Tommy J. Curry. I do not think that term should be used. That's just my counter-racist suggestion. I'm a victim of racism. You can reject or accept that suggestion. You can, you know, process it, see if it's constructive. But I do not think that that word is constructive. I have no idea what that means. Are there non-racialized men? What is that? In fact, I was going to write it down to make notes about things I wanted to make sure that I touched on. And when I spelled racialized, the spell check didn't even recognize the word. It changed it to radicalized. I had to go back and change it again. Do not use the word. I have no idea. If we're talking about non-white people, make it plain. Just say that. Non-white people, individuals not classified as white, not going to be suspended in this area of Toronto. That stood out. I thought the same thing that Mr. Cole did. Why are they implementing what to me sounds like a radical policy? I've never heard of that anywhere. To say that we're, and I would also want to know, does the policy say that they're not suspending racialized men? And if so, why does it say that? Do we even have an explanation of what that means? If that's like the official company policy that no racialized employees can be suspended, like, wow, is the word racialized in the company handbook? Anywho, I thought that was really important. For many of the reasons that he touched on in the report, but even them highlighting that it was black females specifically who seemed like they were being targeted in the civil service in this part of Toronto. I also thought that his personal share towards the end was equally important, where he was talking about being in a professional setting and this guy, person that he didn't like, I guess they didn't have a constructive exchange. And so, hey, we're not going to be chatting it up. I let this person know it's just business and do not come, you know, looking to just chat about any old thing. Leave me alone. Let's have our space. And now this person is making a point of talking. That's what I mean when my definition of racism, white supremacy talks about dedicated. Frequently, I invoke the terms deliberate, willful, intentional. This is calculated. This is not accidental. These incidents that keep happening with regards to racism, white supremacy, we're talking about the workplace specifically, but it's all areas of people activity. That's not an accident. And I'd say particularly for the workplace, whites, they love that sort of manipulative, conniving, just any little thing that I can do. We've had so many people, matter of fact, world system all over the world, people talking about just little things, leaving litter and trash in your work area, especially if we have a shared workstation, and just finding ways of just leave a little bit of litter, a little bit of trash, move this here, just little thing, particularly once I find out this is something you don't like. We've had listeners who called in before who said, hey, I don't like being touched in the workplace. We can do a handshake and all that. I'm courteous. I'm a team player, but I just don't want to be fondled in the workplace. And from that point, not only did the person continue the touching, then it became sneaky. Let me get up behind you and creep up on you and give you a bear hug. That's not a white person that's confused, ignorant, misinformed, poorly educated. They don't need training. They're dedicated to practicing racism. White supremacy, call it what it is. That's not, or I don't even know what the inverse of that would be. The act of non-racialized man. Are you kidding? Insanity. Words are so, so important. Call things by their proper name. That is the beginning of accurate understanding. And in my view, the general tendency should be when people are doing incorrect things, if they're happening repeatedly, the tendency, the assumption should be until proven otherwise that this is being done deliberately, certainly the case with whites. The number again is 641-715-3640, the code 564-943-pound. Press *61 if you would like to participate. Do we have any folks here? Safety policy on their job, like folks who, I guess, again, if you work in an office, I don't know, I've worked in office settings and they didn't really have, the safety issue would be if a white person comes in and they have an attitude one day and decide that, you know, they're going to show off their gun collection or what have you. But generally, it's not a lot of safety issues from my experience in an office. But folks who might not necessarily be in an office, or at least that's not all of the time that, you know, is going to be required of you in your work situation, the safety component, that would be grand. If folks have particular instances where you have had to use counter-racism in order to maintain safety on the job, that would be grand, or just safety period, even if it's not coming up as a counter-racism issue, as a safety issue, because racists, they are derelict about that. Nothing is valued more than practicing racism, so safety and everything else goes to the wayside frequently. That's one. Two, we are in the middle of what they call the horror day season, so Dr. Kanban's term, if folks have revamped, refined their holiday code for dealing with the parties and all the other nonsense, let us know. I am sure those office parties and, you know, all the other shenanigans are beginning to pop up. If you are refining, I've talked about that before, and just saying you're not going to go. If you got to go, you obviously don't drink. You try to take somebody with you, and you are only going to be there for 30, 45 minutes max. You show up, hey, say hi to a few folks, sober the whole time, gotta roll. Previous engagements, pal is with me, and we are out. We've talked about this extensively, but if folks have updates to their holiday counter-racist code in the workplace, always looking to refine. If you dialed in and have a hand up, thought you would like to share, line should be open. Proceed.
Can I be heard?
Greetings, retired firefighter.
Greetings, Gus. Greetings, everyone. I think I heard your question, and I think I have a classic instance of that particular question, safety. Of course, I mean, logically speaking, without even knowing a whole lot about what a fireman or firefighter does, you know, with a lot of safety clauses that are involved. But you must imagine that people are not going to follow them for various reasons. There are some people who are better at doing the job than others, and one of the reasons why is because of the negligence of safety and proper procedures on how to do things, which it also implies safety, being safe. This particular situation, it was actually a quote-unquote drill, which basically, you know, firefighters practice all the time. They call it drills of different types. This particular case, there was a fire at this place, an old apartment store building. Matter of fact, it's not too far from where I'm sitting at right now, in the city of Miami Gardens. And the fire was pretty severe. So for some reason, someone decided to have a drill at the same site. Now, logically speaking, one would state, well, that's not really a good idea because, you know, in a fire, of course, building materials get compromised severely due to fire. You know, metal melts. concrete gets weaker. The whole construction of a building has already been harmed by fire, it's not a safe place to have a drill at. But nevertheless, some people are probably looking for promotions and looking for a means to say we're doing something. Anyway, so the part, or if not the whole battalion, I'm talking about something that actually took place probably about 25 years ago, was on this drill. And it required that we go on the roof. Just put in your imagination about a three-story, a building that's equivalent to something like three stories, three stories high. And we found ourselves on the roof, and basically was talking about what took place. I wasn't on the actual fire. It was another shift. And some of the guys was talking about what took place. And from there, you know, things got kind of lax, to whereas I started to pick up a rock and throw it at the side of this building up on the ceiling, the roof of this building. And something told me, but don't do it, because if I miss what I was aiming at, it would go right out into a major thoroughfare, Northwest 27th Avenue, and put out somebody's window. You know, and so my instincts told me to don't do that, and I didn't. So eventually we all left from the ceiling. Another unit showed up late. White male was in charge of that particular crew. He put his crew up there on the floor, unbeknownst to almost everybody, because the next thing you know, we were all outside talking on the ground floor, talking, you know, getting ready to disperse and go back to, daily routine of going on emergency calls, so on and so forth. And all of a sudden on the radio, you can hear the banter on the radio about, Mayday, Mayday. We have a guy that's down. And I'm trying to think, wait a minute, how can somebody be down? Nobody is at the building on top of that building anymore. They actually went up there without a lot of people knowing it. What took place was, and it's ironic, that the very area where I was going to pick up that rock, the ceiling was weak, very weak. And one of the crew members of that truck fell through the ceiling, three stories down across the floor of the building. And in a calm way, he was describing on what his injuries was. If I have a broken hip, I have a compound fracture of my right leg, so on and so forth, you know, that sort of thing. He was describing on what was wrong with him. And we spent our time getting into the door to get him out of this, he literally fell into a bunch of poles and lumber and concrete that was left from the fire itself. And basically, just from the standpoint of someone not really having a deep concern for the personnel, and it was a white person that wasn't really concerned about the concern for the personnel, and basically was concerned about getting a drill done without going through some sort of deep understanding. And that's just the nature of that particular job itself. I've one last thing on this subject. I've made it my business, after having a lot of time on, because I figure, you know, the hell with rank. I know just as much as anybody that's going to be on that truck. And I am not going to risk my life for a freaking building. You know, for that building could burn down, as far as I'm concerned, before I risk my life, you know, because some white guy wants to be a hero, get a medal from the mayor of Dade County or something like that. And I was stated around the station. I was stated around the station as far as that concerned, you know, and let them know that, you know, if I, in other words, if I'm going to risk my life, I'm going to make that decision if I could. I'm going to make that. I mean, you can't always do that, of course, but in a some situation where you know where you're going, you know, to a particular call, you know where you're going, and you can just about understand the particular potential dangers and whatnot, I'm going to make that decision, not some darn white lieutenant or whatever is going to get me to go into some place. And fortunately, because y'all are conversing, has been conversing years with the retired firefighter, I managed to avoid a lot of the dangers that took place. Other than that, workplace racism, once again, Mrs. Snipes is in the news. Yes, Gus, she did say that she would resign, but the racist governor, the one that's leaving to become a senator, he is very vindictive racist white supremacist. He decided to say, no, you're going to leave right now. We're going to suspend you. We're going to suspend you and be gone with you. That sort of thing. Last but not least, with the Stoneman Douglas massacre that took place on quote unquote Valentine's Day. I read an article today. It was in the Sun Sentinel, left it one of the major newspapers in Broward County. And it appears that in my youngest sister, who's an enforcement official in Dade County, she mentioned it months ago, that it looks like they're going to go at the non-white black male who is the head of Broward County Public Schools. That's what it seems like in this article, because they basically have been organizing to get to the bottom of all of the people who quote unquote screwed up with this, but that particular incident. They already have victimized a black male who was a vice principal at the school. And I suspect that eventually in this article, his name was the only personality that came up in the article. Runcie is his name, black male who was the head administrator of Broward County Public Schools. I suspect they're going to go after him to get rid of him. I suspect. And that's what I have to report so far, and I'll just listen to everybody else, and if I can, I would chime in and make some comments. Thank you.
Much obliged, retired firefighter. I would encourage listeners, I think the way I've heard Dr. Kanban explain it before is that we get signals from the universe. Mr. Fuller said the same thing, that, you know, we get symbols. We get little signals that if we can pay attention, I think just said something told you, maybe I shouldn't throw this rock. That right there might be a signal. Maybe not. Maybe that's just logic kicking in. I'm up here supposed to be firefighting, not slinging rocks. That's logic kicking in too. Either way, if we could pay attention to that more often, I think we would do better. Wouldn't surprise me at all if it rock throwing Negro caused me to fall through the roof and prosecute him for assault and all the rest of it. I think just very, very wise for us to, if we can kind of be in that more frequently, particularly in the workplace. With regards to Dr. Snipes being suspended, even though she had already said like weeks ago that she was going to resign, I think she had already submitted her resignation, does not surprise me at all. As you said, the vindictiveness and tackiness of whites and her being suspended immediately. And that's like probably like one of his final acts, to suspend a nigger that's already offered a resignation before he leaves the governor's office to go be a U.S. senator. With the suspending this black female, that's why I said with that report Desmond Cole was talking about, where they said that they were no longer going to suspend racialized employees, they suspend black people all the time all over the world. That's why I said that is astronomical. That might even be an understatement, that they're not going to be suspending anybody for this specified amount of time and for no reason being given. Anywho, other folks, if you dialed in, if you have a hand up commentary to share, If you have a hand up, line should be open.
Good evening. Can I be heard?
Yes, sir.
Greetings, Gus, and greetings to everyone on the line. I have a few things to share today. Recently, I want to say maybe about two or three programs ago, I reported on a pregnant black female that I work with. She was having a couple of difficulties regarding her. She's a high risk pregnancy, and she was unable to perform her normal task. Luckily, she contacted EEO. Now, this EEO, luckily, they are of a higher, I guess I want to say, echelon or higher governing body over our actual organization that we directly work for. So, and they're not even located. They are located in a different area from where our HR department is located. So there was a conflict with EEO was saying that there was certain steps you had to take so that she could be accommodated and she would continue to work, but in a different capacity and not have to, invoke her FMLA. And she can invoke her FMLA actually when she, actually gives birth. But the human resources department was saying that, hey, you need to invoke your FMLA. Just go home. Don't work. But the EEO was saying that, hey, you can just submit some paperwork and between your supervisor and HR, they can either have you stay at your current workplace and work in a different capacity or maybe even go to a different location within our organization and work in a different capacity wherever there's help needed in whatever different departments. So initially, again, HR was saying, hey, you have to invoke your FMLA. But what happened was she didn't have to invoke her FMLA. So HR was, their interest was with our organization, and they were not caring about the well-being of, this black, soon-to-be black mother and her unborn child and her being able to work. So they were saying that, hey, invoke your FMLA, but what ended up happening was she's going to be transferring to another department and working there, just doing some administrative work for this department. And they told her, hey, you're going to be moving to this admin department, and we'll let you know. Oh, actually, they gave her a choice of like four or five different areas to work in. She picked one. And then, okay, and they said, okay, you pick this one. And then later on they said, oh, well, this one's not available. They're looking for something different for the, in this department. So they ended up telling her where she's going to be going. And they came today to her and just said, hey, you're going to be going to this department on Monday. So with such a short notice, like they didn't give her any type of, time to prepare anything. But anyway, she's going to be reporting to this other office on Monday. And they told her this late this afternoon, just prior to getting off work. I suspect there's a lot of racism being practiced behind the scenes, so to speak, and they're not being forthcoming with all the information and stuff. And especially HR, they really just said, hey, you just need to invoke your FMLA. And she didn't have to. So Also, I work with a black male, a little younger than me, myself. He's physically larger than myself. He's a bigger guy, more melanated than myself as well. We talked occasionally. He's in a tragic arrangement, as I've said before on a previous program. But what I notice is whenever I enter a room where he's at, like if I open a door or I enter a room where he's at, or I speak, not loudly, but just loud enough to get the, you know, the job done, he frequently jumps. He's startled as if I'm scaring him. But what I suspect is with him being a larger black male, larger than myself, black male, a very, very deep toned voice, even, you know, deeper than mine, very like a booming voice. He's I think racism has been practiced on him so much to where he wants to, you know, appear to be so non-threatening that, you know, even movements from myself or and other people is posing a threat to him. So he's basically kind of acting as if he's a white woman. So, because white women usually do that with me, where you know, if I, oh, you scare me, and I know, I guess you were, this was, you were talking about this before on, I think, a previous program, and I think during the Man Not, the reading, but yeah, he essentially has taken on that persona where, and I'm like, man, what did I scare you? What are you? Why are you jumping? But I don't address it anymore. But I notice that he does that quite often. Oh, you know, you kind of scare me there. And I'm like, what do you, come on, and it's quite, yes, I'll say slightly irritating. And lastly, I like to say that this is back when I was still in the military. I had spoke with my supervisor, a white male, suspected racist. This is one area where I thought I made a mistake, where I thought that I needed help. I noticed that people who were making rank faster, they were being guided by people that were helping them, especially white people, but they were being guided by people. And during my time in, there was a big push for mentorship, find a mentor, assign a mentor. So I was very forthcoming with the suspected racist, which I probably shouldn't have, but I told him, hey, I never had a real true mentor, and I'm looking for one. And he was like, oh yeah, sure. You know, I let me think about it. And I know a lot of the, senior people around here. So I'll think about one and I'll, assign you one. He's like, and then the next day he came to me, it's like, hey, I have a great one for you, man. This guy, you guys have a lot in common, man. You guys both like sports, which, you know, another mistake of mine, you know, he knew that I liked sports back then. And you guys like sport. He's very, he said diesel, like as in he works out a lot and he's big and, you know, he's just a great guy, blah, blah, blah. I'm like, okay. You know, I didn't get too excited, but, I was like, yeah, that's good. And I went to meet this guy. He set up he arranged a meeting. I met him. So he didn't tell me his race, of course, but it was a white guy, suspected racist. Yeah, he grew up in Texas. He was telling me about how he grew up on a ranch. He well-to-do parents. He was kind of like bragging on his upbringing and all of his accomplishments. And yeah, I felt like this guy wasn't really concerned with being a true mentor, and he was practicing racism. So I never met with him again. I kind of, you know, stayed away from him. But in retrospect, I probably should have asked a lot of questions and see if I could benefit from that relationship at all, or a so-called relationship. I wouldn't even consider it that, but I should have asked more questions to see if maybe he could offer some helpful information or anything like that. So that's all I have to share. Thank you.
Much obliged. Thank you for sharing quite a bevy of reports there with the pregnant female prenatal yoga instructor. But this, I mean, that's just so tacky. And I think last week Stacey was on, and it was Thanksgiving, so they say. And I was talking about the tackiness of, you know, them saying, oh, let's talk about what we're grateful for and we're so thankful this time of year. That's nonsense. Unless they're saying we're thankful for the niggers. Thankful I get to tell all these nigger jokes and mistreat all the black people every day. Unless that's what they're saying, like, that's nonsense, because we don't really value. That's not value in the system of racism, white supremacy. You got a pregnant mom. Now, they do all that talking. They've had all these articles in the L.A. Times and everywhere else. Oh, my goodness, the high rates of maternal mortality. And what are we going to do? And what are we going to do? And they can't even get
it. So.
They can't even get it correct on the job. Or, excuse me, they can't even be consistent in the workplace. One person will say, oh, yeah, this is what the policy is. You can just fill out this paperwork. You don't need to use your FMLA. And then the human resource person, oh, no, you got to get out of here today. Fill out your FMLA and, you know, scoot. And then, okay, well, pick a location that you would like to do so we can get you some relief. Got all these pregnant black mothers, just what we need. Okay, so you picked A? Great, okay. And then they wait and come back, and, oh, yeah, A is already filled. Yeah. So sorry, so you're going to have to do D. And then wait till the end of the day. That's what we talk about this regularly. They set you up for failure. Now, you get to come in the end of the day at this time of year. You might even have people out for holidays and what have you, the end of the day on a Friday. And I'm supposed to, well, wait a minute. Do I have questions? Do I have all the information that I need? Am I going to the same location? Is this a different place? Like, oh, man, who am I supposed to meet? What am I going to be doing with this new assignment? Racists do that sort of thing all the time, setting you up or setting us up for failure. They do this all the time. Not to mention, do I get adequate training so that I can, you know, really be adequate in this job? With the black male being, or I guess being startled, that's his pattern. That very well, the segment that we read yesterday from Dr. Curry, where he talked about, let's see, I think I highlighted the passage. Yep. Highlighted the passage. What did he say? Historically, black men often fare worse than black women in professional and skilled employment settings because of the different stereotypes applied to black males and the level of education between the groups. Black men are often associated with such negative stereotypes that any assertive act of speech or demonstration of leadership is thought to be threatening. In these professional executive environments, black men are penalized for exhibiting agentic characteristics, assertiveness, self-confidence, conviction, could have added melanin there too, maybe, while black women are not. This penalty is so severe that a disarming mechanism, for example, a baby face, humor, or a startle response, maybe, a skill or quirk that allays the threats that whites perceive black males to pose to them is recommended for black men. That sounds exactly like the black male that you, I would love, in fact, to hear his response even to that paragraph, like just what if he's, you know, as large as you say and melanated and what have you. I don't know if it's, if the work environment that you're in is mostly male or mostly female, but I mean, yikes, if he's in an environment where he has to be around a lot of white females, even white men, that still would not be a pleasant space. But I mean, I can totally understand how that would, and especially if he's been around white women and that's how they've responded to him. Maybe he said, I'm going to do the same thing. I can beat them to it. And that'll help, you know, balance out some of this. I think Mr. Williams said he would do the same thing. He would kind of mimic some of the things that they do in the job. The asking questions, I think that came up last week. asking questions. I said the same thing. I would have asked way more questions in the workplace. Any of those, what they call mentorships, or these relationships with whites on the job, ask questions. Ask questions. That would be my homework assignment, my counter-racist experiment. Asking questions. Asking. I'm trying to learn as much constructive information that I can use for this job. Whites know a lot. Other folks, the number again, 641-715-3640. The code 564-943-pound. Press *61 if you would like to participate. Other folks who dialed in, if you have a hand up, commentary to share, lines should be open. Proceed.
Good evening, Josh. Can I be heard?
Greetings, Thomas in New York.
Josh, I apologize. You know, every time I get on the phone and I'm listening to the show, it's like clockwork, like work. Someone calls me, and then when I click over to tell someone, listen, I'm on the radio, call you back. And when I come back, I'm not muted, and I don't realize it right away. I apologize. My old phone didn't do that. I apologize. The work week for me, my white terrorist, boy, she's been awfully nice because we're doing a lot of work, me and the other gentleman at job I used to, you know, that used to do the job I did, packing up the office, coming in on the weekend, doing what we, you know, so she's been very, looking over us, but good job, guys, you know, that type of thing, like white people tend to do. So the CEO, white woman, comes over and says, you know, I appreciate all the hard work you guys do. And because I always tell them I don't drink when they ask me to go out for drinks with them. I know that you don't drink, so I got you a present. So I'll be right back with you. So she came back with these chocolates. So it was these Belgian chocolate box, you know. And I see the store, so I say, oh, this is a pretty pricey box. I would have rather had the money, but okay. So I come home. And, you know, I gave it to my wife and say, hey, listen, you know, I got these chocolates at work. And, you know, the boss, you know, says, oh, look at the nice packaging. So she opens them up and she put it in her mouth and she spit it out. So, so now my daughter's in there. She put one in her mouth. She spit it out. So my other daughter, she likes nasty chocolates. So, you know, but she took it and she spit it out. So I threw the rest of it out. But either way. Find out today. The first lady says, did the CEO, because she's her secretary, give you the present? So I said, what's the present? So she says, if she didn't give it, I don't want to give it away. So I said, you talked about the chocolate. So she said, yeah, I picked it out myself. So I said, oh, okay. So that explained it all right there. How was it? I was like, oh, it's good, you know? Either way up. But either way, absolutely. But like I said, cleaning out 30 years worth of office that's been in one place for 30 years, and everywhere you look, there's something that you didn't see before that needs to be looked through and, you know, discarded or something. It's been a tedious task doing that. As far as safety. In office settings, it's generally you go through security in the lobby and you have a card. If you have a card, you just walk through a turnstile and you put the card either on it or in it, and it pops open and you walk through and you get in the elevator. Some of them you need to use your card to unlock the floor or whatever, you know. But safety issues when I worked in the hospital, when two people were shot at the same time, the hospital would be locked down. Not even their parents could come in the hospital. It was really very unsafe. I can't even think of a place that, other than prison, that would be more unsafe than the hospital. I mean, we had a shooting in the hospital. We had someone steal a baby or attempt to steal a baby, another person. It's a very unsafe place. And there were so many safety procedures. And if you notice in the hospital, they're all acronyms. All the procedures are acronyms. PASS, or it might be proceed according to, you know, it's like everything's an acronym, but it was so many safety procedures. We had a card, what to do if this happens, you know, it was all attached to our ID. It was like 10 things that might go wrong. And then also, like the firefighters say, you have fire safety. Now, working in office buildings, any time that we've had a fire drill and we had to go down the stairs, I learned from 9/11 that you I always make sure that they put lights there. I asked them, wait a minute, it's too dark, and because that was going down those stairs was not easy in the pitch dark, and not knowing what was in front of you or somebody fell in front of me, just simple lights there. But that's all I had to say, Gus. Thank you.
I had never really considered a hospital or thought of it as a dangerous work environment. But then, I mean, yeah, I guess you do have shooting victims and race soldiers, enforcement officials coming through. And then the pregnancies, absolutely, people having, you know, fights over the children and all that, trying to steal. That's, you know, a big thing, stealing children or attempting. That certainly can be something to cause for conflict. I hadn't thought about all, and then mental health issues. I hadn't thought about all the different things that are taking place at a hospital that would make it an unsafe environment. But yeah, that's something to consider, really, for any work environment. That's something to consider. Like, if this is, you know, how unsafe is this place? Is it unsafe? What are the natures of the safety hazards that I might, you know, encounter on this job, including the whites that I work with, because that's like safety hazard number one. But that's important to be mindful of all of that. Like you were talking about the lights in the stairwell. It's extremely important to know. And again, whites are not going to look out for you. They might, you know, look out for themselves, make sure they all got their little, what do they call the headband lights so that they can get down the stairwell. But they will have conveniently forgotten Thomas's headband light strap so that you can't see to get out of the building. Like, I don't know what happened. We got one for everyone. Just must have forgot about you that day, buddy. The office, I said, refining the holiday code, because it's going to be a whole lot of that, giving out chocolates and fruitcake and pound cake and all that other nonsense. I would put all of that in the trash. I chuckled a little bit, like, dang, he set his family up as the tasters. Like, if they had poisoned it, he's going to hit the wife off first. Like, yeah, I would toss all of that stuff. Like, I would not encourage anybody to eat any of that. I mean, these folks laugh and joke about terrorizing us year round. And now, and like you said, as opposed to a raise, as opposed to not coming in the kitchen and bumping me when I'm trying to cut the fruit so I don't chop my finger off, as opposed to not fondling my nuts, the legumes, or my genital area, I get nasty chocolate. Come on, I was even waiting for the punchline. Like, is this a laxative? Like, what is going on here? Like, in the trash, in the trash. Even if it was my favorite food, in the trash. In the trash, and definitely not participating in any of the, you know, you're supposed, yeah, a whole lot of that. I wouldn't be surprised they try to come back and you're supposed to, where's my gift at? I got you those great gifts, those great chocolates, Thomas. Are you going to get a gift for me? Anything? I showed you my panties and everything. Like, other folks, in fact, the GM report, I didn't play it at the beginning, but I used the video for 9 workers at a GM factory in Ohio filed a lawsuit alleging racism, white supremacy. I just wanted to make sure I included it because there was all this talk this week about GM closing plants here in North America. And Donald Trump talked about this. He was all upset and, you know, no good nicks. This is going against his Make America Great Again type thing. This also came out this week about the very same GM. The report, I'm not going to read the whole thing, but just some of it reads, 9 people have filed a lawsuit alleging they were subject to racist remarks and acts in the last couple of years at a General Motors plant in Toledo, Ohio. Mark Edwards of Detroit has worked for GM since 1977. He started working at Powertrain and Fabrications plant in 2015. He says in March of 2017, a noose was hanging from the rafters in his workspace. It was devastating for me to see something like this, says Edwards. He added, my heart just dropped. I was breathless for a minute. On March 22, 2017, the lawsuit alleges that 3 nooses were found in the casing machine department on lanyards at about 11:30. On April 25th, the lawsuit said another noose was found hanging in the assembly room between the first and second shifts. Another was found against a machine on May 2nd. Then on June 2nd, the lawsuit alleges a white employee threw a rope that looked like a noose at an African-American employee, but says GM determined it was horseplay and put the employee under the horseplay rule for 30 days. Are you serious? The horseplay rule. Does anybody, I can't even read the rest of the report. Does anybody work on a job where they have a horseplay rule? And they said they put him under the horseplay rule for 30 days. I've never heard of the horseplay rule, even when I was in elementary and junior high school. They didn't have a horseplay rule. And then for 30 days, I'm going to pause right there. It was other stuff because they had signs up, whites only next to the bathroom and all this other stuff. The horseplay rule in the workplace for allegedly throwing a noose. I just want to pause. Has anyone ever heard of the horseplay rule in the workplace? I will take that as a no. Nobody's familiar with the horseplay rule in the workplace.
I don't know of such thing, but of course you probably know in the fire station there it is constant activity of that nature that does take place.
I am aware of
it.
I
always avoided it. I always avoided it. That's all.
That would be advisable, but I mean, I have never in my life, and they didn't even give an explanation. That's one I would fault them for poor journalism. This is WXYZ Detroit, an ABC affiliate. But I would say that that's poor journalism because I've never heard of anything called the horseplay rule. And that's not like if they had said something like, you know, we're going to give him a disciplinary review, like, oh, okay, I don't really need that explained. But the horseplay rule, I need that explained. I have no idea what that is, how long that is. What is that? How does that relate to someone being accused of throwing a noose at a black person? How does that exactly fall? And what are the stipulations of the horseplay rule? I would want as much detail as possible. And they did not give that WXYZ Detroit ABC 7 affiliate. Anywho, I did not hear as much attention about that. They talked about a whole culture of racism, white supremacy at this plant where this stuff went on for you. Like I said, it was a lot more. I just stopped right there. I would be mindful. And that's why I say about rule, words. Words are so important just in general, talking about racism, white supremacy, but especially in the workplace. I said before, racialized employees. What does that mean? The horseplay. That's one of those when I talk about reading policy and procedure immediately. The horseplay rule. Can I have that explained in detail, please? What does that entail? And take lots of notes. You should be looking anytime you go through policy and procedure and you see anything like that that stands out that you don't understand, have never seen before. Make sure that you get that explained in detail so that a 10-year-old could understand it. Context of white supremacy. The other folks have commentary. They wanted the horseplay rule. That is, other folks have commentary that they wanted to share. Workplace racism.
Can we hear it?
Yes, sir.
All right. First time caller. I previously called in, calling back from Queens. The horseplay rule, yes. I've actually heard about that many times. Well, working in the restaurant industry, it's kind of a terminology used. As I don't want to use it in that particular term, you know, cause I'm trying to stay off of metaphors and things, but horseplaying in a sense of messing around and things of that nature. Of I've actually been in a situation where it was myself and a non-white person, Indian male, just messing around in the past area being a kind of I would say the holding place where you keep the food to keep it hot before you go out and deliver it to the tables. Just kind of I would say shoulder pushing, things of that nature. And then the older maybe the Asian male who was the manager at the time, or white male was a manager at the time, actually rolled us both up for horse playing.
Was this like a termination? Like how much of a, or how serious was this write up? Was this something like this is going to be in your permanent file if you get one of these, or if you get, you know, one, two more of these grounds for termination? Like, was this, how serious was this?
Yes, that was the grounds for it. One was more of a verbal warning. Second was I'm taking you to HR, and third was termination, kind of. Yeah.
Wow, that
was about it. Yeah.
I still would be curious to know because this seems like, you know, something that's detailed, because they put it in quotes, the horseplay rule about the GM situation. But same thing that retired firefighter said, that is never a good idea for the workplace. I think the black person, the non-white person, at least in my view, according to counter-racist logic, predictably is going to get the bad end of those type of arrangements. It's not going to be giving you the benefit of the doubt, or, you know, we're all just messing around and that sort of thing. It's going to be perceived as a threat. Exactly what Dr. Curry said. It's going to be perceived as a threat and taken way more seriously. And, you know, this will be the sort of thing that comes up, you know, 5 years later when it's time to deny you a promotion. Well, you were throwing that Nerf ball around back in 1995. And, yeah, I don't know if that's what we want for a CEO. We need someone who's going to be a bit more serious about this position. That's the sort of thing you can expect, system of white supremacy.
Totally agree. Totally agree. Totally agree.
For sure. Much obliged. First time caller, Queens area. Lots of New York listeners. Other folks, if you dialed in, hand up. Certainly, if anybody can give clarification about the horseplay rule, I would love it. Folks are lollygagging while they are lollygagging. If that means folks are not being abused on the job, for sure, invest in the cows, racism-notes.blogspot.com. PayPal button in the top right corner. You can also hit the wish list at amazon.com under Gus T. Renegade. I don't do holidays, but hey, you can nab a gift from the wish list. If you are not being abused on the job, if things are going that great, you're getting all your promotions, raises, and what have you, you don't have any of these difficulties in your workspace, great. Invest. And again, you should still have a hand up to tell us, how in the world did you accomplish that? Folks are still taking their time. I assume folks are still being spectators. Oh, there's.
Can I be heard?
Greetings, Emmy. Good to hear from you.
Greetings, beautiful people. I'm always being abused in all of my workplaces, in all of my so-called professional settings. I haven't followed up with you all primarily because I wanted to make sure that my situation had been completely resolved. I'm at the end of my semester. So in terms of dealing, just a very brief recap, I was going to take a trip. I needed to arrange to take two quizzes. I had in writing that he would work with me. He decided to announce a quiz at the time that I had, well, I had training and then I would was taking a trip, so I was going to miss these days anyway. Then he tried to berate me for 30 minutes. I recorded it. I also had everything written in documentation, but he still tried to give me these zeros for the quizzes. I consulted Mr. Fuller, who provided me the language with which to escalate the situation in written form and really set the tone that I'm not playing about this whatsoever. And I was very nervous about using his verbiage. Long story short, I had to get a mediator. Then I had to meet with the department head who, you know, kept wanting to spin the situation and make it seem like I had an attitude or something. And I just kept redirecting the conversation by following my code. And it was only when I said, I have all of this in writing. Mr. Fuller had recommended that not to talk about the recording that I had and to focus on the writing. And it was essentially when I said, you know, I have confirmation that I was going to be allowed to take these quizzes outside of the normal class period due to these circumstances in written form. And he just looked at me and was like, oh, you have it in writing? And I said, yes, which I will happily forward to you. I had everything in a PDF document. And he said, oh, well, you know, case closed. And then I heard from the professor and everything was arranged. Unfortunately, I wasn't able to say case closed on my end because I didn't know if I would be targeted in the future for any grading. And so, but now that I'm at the end, I only have one exam left. I was able to secure my grade. And so, if it doesn't work out well and I somehow get this exam back and he decides to take out all of that, you know, anger against me or not even, let's just say, you know, practice his racism against me, I guess I'll just be telling you all that later. So far, so good, though. So, you know, if you're unfamiliar with some of the verbiage that Mr. Fuller enumerates in his book, I would say get a little familiar with it. It feels funny to be, you know, quoting the Constitution in an email. But it worked. So, you know, I'm pragmatic. If it works, it works. And let's just keep doing that until it don't work. Okay. Then I had another situation with another professor who I'm in Virginia. And we had snow last, like two Thursdays ago. But, you know, the further north you are, the more snowy it was. Now, I commute about an hour and some change away south to school. So where I was, it was, you know, raining ice and pretty much about to be some snow. And then where I go to school, it was just only the rain. For the lab, they have a policy that is if you're 10 minutes after the start of the lab, you're not allowed to participate in the lab. I was 1 minute. Lab starts at 8. I was there at 8:11. And I was like emailing and texting my lab partners trying to work this out. And they did not let me participate. Even though it is a known fact that I live over an hour away and that the weather is slightly different in this location, I did not make a big fuss about it in front of anyone. I blew up in my car, though. I went off because it's dangerous to also be on the road this much. But anyway, I made my, you know, I made my decision. I said what I was going to do. So I decided at first I was going to go right because it's in the same department, chemistry department. I was going to go right to the head and, you know, enumerate my frustration with this policy because it really didn't, it's not accommodating for those of us who have extraneous circumstances. Like we live an hour and a half away. And just because the weather is different in these localities, I shouldn't be penalized for that. Like how I shouldn't, it doesn't matter. So I drafted an email and I decided not to send the email because the truth of the matter is once you miss the lab, it's not like I can just go in and do this very long, you know, organic lab. So there would really be no recourse and no need. Like, I had to choose between my health and stress level and what I wanted to do. So, and I figured, you know, we have surveys for all of our professors. So I listed my, you know, not grievances, because that has an emotional tinge to it, but it's very dangerous to be in a situation, whether you're in school or at work, where your duties, responsibilities, and code of conduct are explicitly listed, but the expectations of those who supervise you are not. And so it creates a dynamic where only you can be held accountable, and whatever they're doing is just up to their discretion. And so this is unacceptable, because I had been patient and understanding with this suspected terrorist. And, you know, like, none of my grades are uploaded. I'm not trying to complain on this line, but, you know, I have really no idea where I stand. None of my papers have been handed in. I, you know, there's no feedback on my work. We're just doing, you know, what we got to do because we need this class. So to sit there and try to hold me to a policy and procedure, a standard by 1 minute, yet you're not doing what I pay you to do, because I pay to come here, right? I think that this is unjust. There's enough evidence that this is unjust and it's incorrect behavior. So I made sure to put that there. And I also explicitly state this in an email to the you know, department afterwards, but it's not really important right now, because the end game is going to be the same for me. You do the best you do so you can get out. That was one thing. So moving on, I wanted to do a capstone seminar for drug biology, which I was really excited about. The white female professor has a cap of 12 students, but it's specifically designed for biology majors. I'm not a biology major, but I really wanted to do this because I've already been looking up like melanic receptors and where they're located in the brain and potential drug targets and, you know, all this stuff just on my own. So I was very excited about this. Usually she has to turn people away, but this semester she hasn't had to turn any away, and she's only filled like 4 of the slots. When I first inquired, she told me it was only for biology majors. But when she set her second call earlier this week, she said only 4 people signed up. So I went to her and I'm like, okay, so who I got to talk to get up in this? Because obviously biology majors ain't trying to take advantage. I didn't, of course, say it that way, but you can understand what I'm saying. And, you know, now she was like, well, you would have to talk to your advisor and then send me an email and get this paper, and maybe I can put you on the wait list. And one of my internal code is I've been practicing listening to myself first and being able to fall back on my very basic instincts, good, bad kind of differentiation, and being able, and I'm very big on nonverbals. And it was so sad because I had to make the executive decision. I said, as badly as I would like to have this experience, this research experience, this intense research experience, I'm going to have to say no based off of this suspected racist white female's nonverbals and the gut feeling that I had. Because even if I managed to speak with an advisor, fill in this paper, get on the wait list, no one else sign up, I get in there, the way that what I felt, what I intuited from the situation, I was like, this won't be good. And I really don't need it because my stress level is high. And this would be like the last thing I need, is to be in such an intimate setting where, you know, there's only 12 of us. And every week for the next couple months, I'm really stressed out. And so, yeah, I won't be able to do that. Then a bunch of stuff has happened at work. I work at a hospital and a pharmacy, but I document everything. And once they tried to not pay me correctly, but I had in writing that was my, because I came in when I wasn't supposed to, so they agreed to pay me more per hour. And so when I got my check, it was like $3 short, $2 to $3 short per hour. And so when I went to, you know, inquire about this, they tried to give me a runaround, and I just forwarded them the email where we agreed on what they were going to pay my bonus for that, picking up that shift, and I got my money. So then over the so-called holiday, my code for the holiday is 1.5 hours. I'm about to try and make as much money on this so-called holiday as possible. So I did that. And they played me because I did an overnight at the hospital on Thursday. So that meant I went in at 11 and I got off at 7 Friday morning. And I only made 1.5 hours for 1 hour because that was technically on that Thursday, which is that so-called holiday. And they only paid me the base pay of the $7 for the Friday. But what's interesting, and this is why everything should be in writing, I had called the main office to confirm how this thing worked, because this is kind of a new job for me. So, you know, and they were like, yeah, you know, time and a half, da-da-da-da-da, Thanksgiving, da-da-da-da-da. I was like, bet, put me on overnight, boop-boop-boop. I'm sitting there thinking the whole time I'm about to make all this money. And then I confirmed, like I sent an email just to confirm all my hours, because I was pulling doubles and all kinds of stuff. I was like, I'm about to get this. And she was like, oh, yeah, well, you only worked one day on Thanksgiving. So technically, on Friday, you're just going to get paid the regular wage. Thanks. And because I did not have anything in writing, I did not pursue that. Because Mr. Fuller has taught me a lot, but that's one of the things that he has really drilled into my head. If it ain't in writing, it didn't happen. Who cares what so-and-so said? So that is pretty much all I can think to share with you all. I hope you all are well, and I appreciate you all listening to me.
Much obliged, Radiant M. Always a hoot to hear from you. I guess briefly before you but depart into the snowy Arctic of Northern Virginia, I do not miss the Commonwealth at all. Was it just the incorporating the language of the Constitution into your report of injustice that made you uneasy, or what specifically about it made you a little hesitant at first?
A moment of transparency. Sometimes my bark could probably be a little like harder than my bite, or let me not use a metaphor, just, you know, trying to not do that ever, not even that it has to be compensatory call, but it's easier to talk than it is to do. And so when I had to invoke that language, that was very strong language. Sometimes it might be, it feels a little easier to be like, well, maybe if you can help me and understand my situation, that'd be great, versus something unjust is occurring against me and I'm standing on my right as a so-called American citizen invoking the Constitution of the United States. Boom. It just, for me, that was a lot. So it was the language, but it was also the way that, like, I think if you're going to use that language, you have to be prepared to present yourself as someone capable of using that language. It's not like you can't be flippy floppy. Once you've, you know, made that step, like if you meet with someone, and I did, met with a couple of people, like I had to be from the moment, do you mind if I record this conversation? Boom, it's being recorded. Yes, at this time, it felt very much like court or something. So that was a little bit out of my comfort zone, because in the past, I've always made mistakes. So this was the first time that I had done it, I would say correctly, as a very mature, non as confused person as I used to be. Hopefully that makes sense.
Love it. Love it. That is that should be music. Talk about metaphor, that's meaning that literally. Mr. Fuller, the way he talks about music, something that makes you think in a constructive manner, that should be music. When you're talking on a job, this is academic, but whatever, you're in a job setting and you're talking to the person and you're being mistreated and you say, oh, I got this in writing. And they say, oh, you got it in writing? Oh, case closed. Okay. That should be music. Like, as much as we talk about documenting and getting those electronic communications, so you have an electronic trail of the questions and all the communicate. Oh, I can get my exam moved. I got, you know, scheduling conflict right here. I can take my test right here. No problem. Great. Okay. Got all that written down. Boom. PDF. And this is done. That's what we all want. None of us should want to have to sit around and talk and talk and talk and talk and talk to get a problem solved. Make it a short conversation. Bam, we already talked about this. These are the files moving forward. And Mr. Fuller, I know, I think if I remember correctly, when he was talking about the Constitution and invoking that in the workplace, and he generally, it's only the 5th and the 14th Amendment, due process, equal protection under the law. He doesn't even go through the whole Constitution. It'll just be those two tenets, amendments. But I remember him saying, it wasn't that he was a constitutional scholar. He is not. It wasn't that he had some major affinity for the Constitution and saying, I'm going to be what they call a patriot. He just said, I am a pragmatist, same thing Emmy said. We're in a system of white supremacy. I'm very weak, greatly retarded, and I've been mistreated on the job regularly. This is the one thing that I saw that worked. 15th, 14th Amendment, or excuse me, 14th, 5th Amendment, due process, equal protection. He said that's it worked. That's the only reason that I've continued to say that people should use it. It has worked consistently. Other folks, if you have commentary, the number again, 641-715-3640, the code 564-943-pound. Press *61 if you have commentary. Just that intuition piece I thought was important because I had mentioned that earlier. I think retired firefighter about not throwing that rock. I think that is so important, and particularly that sort of situation, a class that you had been looking forward. I think you had mentioned talked before about being excited about learning this information. And then, wait a minute, the universe is giving me a little bit more information. I don't know. I'm going to reconsider. Maybe this is not the best way for me to invest my time and energy. I think being able to make a reassessment and just you come to a conclusion, move forward. I think that's really important that more of us have confidence and listen when we get those thoughts or we get a little bit of intuition about what decision we should make moving forward. And the safety component, I touched on that earlier as well. Having to drive in the snow, don't have to do that very often here in Seattle. But that as well, for any situation, if you have to get up early and drive, that is a part of, we talk about, or I say the commute, that's a part of workplace racism all the time. It's that season now, driving in the snow or any of that, that too counts as a part of safety. Because I've been on jobs where they don't close anything and expect people to be, you know, someplace really early or really late, under really dangerous driving conditions. And, you know, it's no sort of sympathy, no sort of, oh man, we don't want you to die or anything. If you're going to get here at 8:11, you're supposed to be here at 8. I mean, my goodness, you know, that's wonderful. Just be safe. Not at all draconian as can be. You're supposed to be here at 8. You got here at 8:11. Boom, right up. Put that in the folder. Remember that when it's time for the promotion, that you couldn't even come in on time with all that snow out here. Now wipe your feet off and get to work. That's the attitude that I've seen frequently. Other folks, if you dialed in with commentary, questions, suggestions, proceed.
Can it be heard?
Heard. May I be heard?
Heard both of you. Let's get our female caller.
Hi, Jess. Good evening. I'm really frazzled right now. I won't say, I don't know if this is workplace, but something happened this week and I was so upset with myself because I don't feel I handled it in a codified manner regarding my son's school. Would that be okay to mention?
Oh, yeah. School is workplace racism.
Well, we are, I'm a single mom and I have three children. And I am going to, we are going to Japan on Wednesday for going to support my son who's going to see a concert that has been his lifelong dream to see this artist. And he entered a lotto, but the lotto was just to be able to purchase the ticket. It didn't pay for the ticket. Nothing was free. Everything expenses was on the person. But he was actually chosen in the lotto to purchase the ticket. So I told him if he won the lotto, I would go with him and we'd make it a family vacation. I notified the school a few months ago, about a month and a half, letting them know that my son, my youngest is 11, would be missing 2 weeks of school. Hey, the non-black people take their kids out of school all the time to go on cruises and vacations and sail across the world. I'm going to take my kid when I'm ready and we're going to go live and sail across the world. So this past Tuesday, I sent an email to all of his teachers just as a little reminder, hey, I'm sure you've heard by now from my son that we're going on this once-in-a-lifetime opportunity, this once-in-a-lifetime trip to Japan. So if you have any work you can send or anything we can maybe take with us, I'd greatly appreciate it. One teacher responded back, awesome, what a wonderful opportunity, have a great time. Then this other racist suspect sent me an email Wow, that's awesome. Did you win a contest? So I'm like, it didn't sit right with me immediately. And this is why I said I was disappointed in myself, because I actually responded in a nice way, even though I didn't want to. And the reason I did was on that form I told you I submitted to the guidance counselor, I didn't keep a copy of it, but I do remember it had approve or disapprove, and it gave all the options that I had to choose from to take him out of school for this extended amount of time. And, of course, it was like learning opportunities, which, of course, it's a learning opportunity. So I said yes. But I did say, yes, we did, only because I felt like I didn't want her going to the guidance counselor, hey, did you see that she's just taking her kid out for no reason? Are you sure you want to approve this? I don't know. You know, that fear that comes in that, you know, they will somehow be able to hinder my son making up the work, or saying, hey, well, though that absences aren't excused, he cannot make all that 10 days of schoolwork up. I don't know. So I answered and I said, yes, we're very excited. And then after it has been eating me up, so I just want some advice. One of my friends, she said I should have said, well, that's an interesting question, and kind of leave it open. And I wish I had talked to her before I responded to the email, because now that's perfect. But now I feel compelled to email her back and say, you know, out of curiosity, why did you ask if we won a contest? You know, was it hard to believe that a single mom, a black mom, cannot afford to take a trip to Japan? I don't know. So just wanting some advice about what I should do with that. And if anybody else would follow up with an email.
Right on. Much obliged for sharing. If it's acceptable, please do not feel compelled. Who's the artist you all are going to check out?
Going to see Utada Hikaru. I don't know if you've heard of her. She's like the Beyonce of Japan. He came into her music when he was in middle school. He's 24 now, playing Kingdom Hearts. They play a lot of her music on Kingdom Hearts video game. That's a Walt Disney video game. And then he became like super obsessed with the whole Japanese culture, the music. He was reading the anime books and all that jazz. And he's just been like a super fan of hers over the years. So Utada Hikaru. She sings in English. She has really nice music.
Wow. Grand. Traveling is magnificent. Yeah, global system, but traveling is magnificent. Sometimes traveling can be the thing to remind or solidify that, yes, global system of racism, white supremacy. But that's spectacular. I hope you all have an amazing trip and enjoy it to the fullest. Take some pictures and, yeah, have a grand time. Let us know when you all get back. My thoughts, I think it's important. I think this has been mentioned before, but can't be stressed enough. I think it's important that we not beat ourselves up too much about how we respond to being victimized. As I say regularly, racist, if you are not pleased with your response and how you handled an incident of racism, white supremacy, do not despair. Whites will give you plenty of opportunities to try again. So do not despair ever. I would not beat myself up. And just on the time and energy component of it, I probably would not even say anything else to her. If you are preparing to go across the world, you have probably got a billion things to do between now and then, between packing and children and getting them organized and everything else to get things in order here. That would be very low on my list of priorities to go back and query a suspected racist and her tacky comment. I would just leave it at that. In fact, if that was the only question, like if she had resolved all the other business matters, I might not have even answered that question. Yeah, if all the other business matters were taken care of, you got everything you needed for your child and his schoolwork and everything, did it win a contest? Yeah. Ignore that one and just keep it pushing. Like, there's so much, I think Mr. Josh Wickett, he writes at thecode.net, and he has said that sometimes the system of racism, and this is a metaphor, right? Letting everybody know. So he says sometimes system of white supremacy, it's like sometimes they'll have like a cartoon or on television, and they'll have one person and they'll be playing tennis and like 100 tennis balls will get hit at them at the same time. And so they're, you know, running, trying to hit them all. Sometimes that's the system of racism, white supremacy. Sometimes you don't have to hit any of the balls. Sometimes you don't have to say anything. I've said that regularly. Sometimes nothing need be said. And this is one I would not have said anything at all. I do think it could have been exactly that you said. How is this Negro going across the world? Do they take food stamps on the plane? What is going on? Yes, I totally agree. That's what they think about us. I wouldn't respond even with that, though. As long as I got what I needed straight from my child and whatever, on to Japan, I will catch the tacky. Maybe when I get back, because I'm sure I'll have to see her again. Oh, yeah, you can ask about that. But, yeah, I wouldn't beat myself up over it. I'd be getting ready for my trip, and I will catch the tacky racist when I catch her. I am not a parent. Make sure I say that as well. I am not a parent. Any other folks have a thought on how she handled that or how you would have dealt with it?
Yes, sir. Can I be heard?
Retired firefighter.
In the words of the great William Smokey Robinson, I second that emotion on what you reported. I think you did a pretty good job, ma'am, on your response. And just like Gus said, in a lot of cases, when you are dealing with white people, especially in the professional arena, the less you say, the better you are. I do understand, and I feel the same way that you do, that the comment that she made was tacky, but I think you understand that that's what white people, that's their attitude. That's their behavior. They're always going to say something tacky when it comes, especially with victims of racism, white supremacy. That's to be expected. And I think you did a pretty good codified job as far as your response. And I also would like to congratulate you and your children. Because that's, like you said, that's the opportunity of a lifetime. Anytime when you have the opportunity to go somewhere, especially with your children, and you have a purpose in that, you're not just going somewhere to say, I've been there. It's something that you're going to get a great deal of learning experience out of. That's a great thing. Just go on and have a nice time. But what you do, forget about that. You did a good job. Thank you.
Thank you so much.
Any other folks want to respond to how she handled that situation? Grand. Let us know how the trip unfolds. Have lots of fun. Take pictures. And yeah, the racists will be waiting for you when you get back for sure. The male caller who yielded the floor. Thank you kindly, sir. Did you want to proceed?
Yes. Can I be heard?
Yes, sir.
Yes. Second time caller. I'm from Detroit, was mentioned earlier. Definitely a victim of racism, white supremacy in the workplace. Coming from Michigan, it's like Motor City. Had a lot of experiences with racism, white supremacy. It's very complicated how they do it and complex how they do it. As a young man, always try to keep a job, but through laws in Michigan, they made it real difficult for us to get jobs. Been on the plantation for a while. And they enacted laws like the driver responsibility law when I was younger to take advantage of young men like myself driving, you know, without a license. That catches us up. So once we in debt, I was like in $5,000 or more debt at like 22, just due to driver responsibility fees. And then trying to be responsible when you do finally kind of get it together, you know, I'm like, man, I'm in debt, you know, at young. And you do try to get it together, that forces you to try to take a job, you know. You know, you get a temp job, and then on your way to work, trying to go back and forth to work, you get pulled over, hit you with another driving on suspended. So you always trying to climb out of the hole, for lack of a, you know, a better word, trying to, you always stuck in the position. Then it always goes back to the job, you know. You wind, because of the driver responsibility laws or, you know, transportation issues, late to work. Up here in Michigan, we got snow, so they fired a lot of us, terminated a lot of us, knowing that we can't get to work, you know, penalized us for that. I've had over like 30 jobs. I'm 34, you know. I've been, due to my own ignorance of racism, white supremacy, I can take responsibility when I was younger. But when I did become less confused and started being more codified, it's just more to what you say. You can be there on time every day. You can come on time. You can be professional. And then you can get fired for things that they'll say, he's not the right fit. Like, what? Y'all said if I come here, be on time every day, perform, you know, exceptionally, you know, that I'm guaranteed a job. And like clockwork, you know, over again. Then you got bills, you know, from months ago. And going in, trying to get another job, let you go. It's just real frustrating. And I'm definitely a victim of that. What I can say is Neely Fuller, Dr. Francis Cress Wilson, and yourself done really gave me a lot of information to where I'm not struggling no more. Glad to say these is 6-7 years behind me, these type of struggles, not the racism in the workplace, but those struggles I mentioned earlier. You know, I did manage to get my license, all type of stuff like that. But it's just, it's real crazy. I mean, man, this white supremacy, it stretches deep. It's complicated. They have you economically, institutionally, educationally, and it all webs together to ultimately put you in a, you know, a place of despair. And that's all I wanted to share. Let me mute my line.
Thank you so much for dialing in, caller in Detroit. First time caller, much obliged. Hope the cows has been, continues to be worthy of your time and energy. Mr. Fuller was on the program some years back, and he talked almost about every point that you made. I made it a sound clip for workplace racism, where he said racists, they already know. Now, we hired him. It was July. We know it's snowing. I mean, Michigan. Woof. We know when it's December in Michigan, maybe even November, it's going to be a foot of snow on the ground. And lots of these niggers, they are not going to be able to get here. So we will have an easy white reason to let them go. That'll be a part of their plan. He's everything that you said. That'll be our plan to keep them moving. Job to job to job. Every 6 months, new job. Sometimes it might be every 6 days, new job, new, and just to keep you moving and moving and moving. He talked about all of that, and exactly all the way up to the end, despair. He said that sort of thing is designed to drive you crazy, to have you at your wits' end. You can never get settled. You can never get calm. You can never just have what they call homeostasis. Very important. People like to get a sense of, most people like to get a state of balance where they can kind of know what to expect. You can kind of get a foothold, be in the same job, build a what they call career, where you're not just working, where you can really learn, advance, get a promotion, where you're not just starting brand new, low salary every time. System of white supremacy designed to have black people on that path. Let's see. Other folks, if you dialed in, if you have commentary to share, particularly people we've not heard from, if they're folks we've missed completely, if you have commentary, proceed.
I did have commentary, Gus. I used to have a job. I worked at a company. Well, actually, they got bought out. It's called Chadbourne and Park. They were a law firm. And they had a boss. You know, the boss was a real mean white woman. Not quite as belligerent as the one I have now, but this was a real heavy set, very evil woman. But she was a real old school woman. Either way, she had a policy where the firm policy was you had a 7-minute grace period if you were going to be late. But her policy was you had to be 2 minutes early. And if you were, you know, it pretty much like, for her to feel like you were there and had enough time to all of that, they would, you know, she would have a 2-minute policy. Either way, but if you had up until the time before you were technically late, and 3 latenesses, you were fired. That was her policy. So if you were going to be late, this was what was real slick. Let's just say you're running 3 minutes late. You're going to be late. So instead of you clocking, you know, punching your, using your card to go through the turnstile, because once you hit your card, she was going to, you know, say you were here. Either way, she would make you call in and take a half a day. So you would have to go all the way back home for 3.5 hours, 4 hours or so, and come back. You know, it was real difficult. She made it that extremely difficult. Another tidbit, when I was working in the hospital, one night, person came in, who was, a gunshot victim, and, he was in a room. And, when I got up to that floor, I think I was doing beds this evening. I see the, security just, you know, pretty much stomping this guy out. And then I see a pistol on the ground, and this person went to go kill the person who they shot earlier, and the security was able to catch him. Either way, I also several times, like I said, when there's 2 gunshot victims, they don't let the families in because the families will start fighting each other, so they just keep them outside to fight each other because then the police have to handle that. So that would happen, you know, all the time. Now, sometimes most times, I say 9 times out of 10, the 2 victims' families are, you know, acquainted with each other and they're not fighting each other, but it's several times where the one person shot the other person that they had a problem with. You know, and I always would say on the show, I would help try to break up fights because I felt like the security were extremely hostile toward people. And these were other black people doing this to other black people, but I would try to, you know, nullify situations. But it's extremely, I mean, I can't even think of anywhere else that every night, you know, pretty much you got a lot of pistols around, people around, you know, very arrogant people, you know, that think they're tough guys and they just waiting for something to happen, looking for something. The police are there, the correctionals there, but this is in a, you know, a city and a trauma center. I'm sure, you know, that a city with a lot of black people, very poor, you know, lot of crime, so I'm sure it's probably not like that everywhere, but in the major cities and around them, I think that it's like that. Another old racism incident at a workplace that I would like to share, and this was also regarding that same company I was talking about earlier with the same lady. I had a Puerto Rican manager, and he was, in her opinion, he was weak and not too smart. And, you know, she said that she would talk to him like how this lady talks to me at this job. That's how she talked to him. And, you know, either way, one day I was in trouble and I went in her office and I stood up for myself. And she said, well, at least you have more balls than your manager. And that was how that whole meeting ended. I'll mute my line. Thank you, Gus.
The genital level, everything gets to the genital level. We talked about that yesterday, the words of France Fanon. That's a Welsing moment as well. Welsing moment for sure. Safety in the workplace. I can't emphasize that enough. Workplace, that's kind of been the theme for the whole broadcast, workplace safety. Thomas talking about the highly unsafe environment of the hospital. We had a person who wrote in, black female. She says, my white female manager, who is married to a black male, cowbell, allegedly caused the death of my coworker. She terrorized this black female for years, from what I was told. This black female was only 30 years old and had a daughter, so she only stayed at this terroristic job out of need and necessity. Last week, we noticed my black female coworker falling asleep at her desk. She was very stressed and tired, so we left her alone. My white female manager noticed and decided to mistreat her severely. She was making her do unnecessary work, accusing her of doing it wrong, heavily monitoring her and interrupting her, just plain being abusive to her. When I came into work this week, we got news that on the same day my black coworker kept falling asleep was the same day her 7-year-old daughter found her dead in her sleep. She was only 30. My boss had the nerve to act like she was shocked and sad, only to step away for an hour and come back and start with the next black person. That is the system of racism, white supremacy, and again. And I think we've had a few folks who have said, when it gets, you know, to the certain point, I've said this before, some jobs you're on out of necessity. Whether it's taking care of yourself and, you know, whatever bills, expenses you have, or if you have offspring or whatever it is, you take these jobs. We take these jobs sometimes, as many of us have touched on. It can be difficult to find employment, period. So you find some place where you can earn a few nickels, and it's maybe I'm thinking I'm going to be here for 6 months or just a short period until I can get something else. And then sometimes we end up being in these positions for a very long time. And sometimes they are extraordinarily toxic. I mean, racism is going to be a problem on any job that we get to. But certainly sometimes it's worse. We can find an environment that is a little more helpful for us. And just recognizing if you're in a job where, you know, this is not where I want to be. It's getting to the point where it's impacting how I feel. I'm falling asleep on the job. I'm having difficulty resting. My blood pressure is spiking. Like I'm having lots and lots of difficulties just being on this job. That might be a signal. That might be one that you need to listen to your intuition and say, man, I need to get out of here immediately. It cannot be worth sacrificing your life and your health just to stay on this job for a few nickels. Sometimes we just, as I said, we just get stuck. That's the system of racism, white supremacy, that inertia, not wanting to switch, find a new, better plantation. Other folks, number again, 641-715-3640, the code 564-943-pound. Press *61 if you would like to participate.
Can I be heard?
Greetings, caller in Florida.
Yes, sir. Thank you very much, sir. Greetings to Gus, the host, the listeners and callers. I wanted to start out with my first one. This is a report from my mom. She works at the other courthouse, and she was telling me about how there were these twin brothers. I guess they have a white and a non-white parent. And they were coming into the criminal courthouse, and they were going through the metal detectors, and one of the suspected or pretty much race soldiers, he said, "Well, hold up, wait a minute. Is it, you have a gun right there? Put your hands up." And then, you know, they all just started laughing. So they went upstairs to go pay that ticket, and they told my mom this, and she recommended that these two twins were reported to the deputy sheriff in the county. So I don't know what ended up happening with that one, but that was one that I've been wanting to share. Just that conscious act of racism, where the context that we're in, where black people are being shot, killed, and looked at with contempt, definitely a major act of racism. Number two was, I was having a conversation with the non-white, non-black female. She was saying that when she was registering her two sons in school, because she is married to a white man. So that's a cowbell right there. So she was telling me that when she was putting the racial classification, they told her that they are supposed to classify as the father's racial classification. And I knew I had heard about that somewhere, but I asked her, like, what was the explanation for that? And they couldn't give her one. So I don't know what she ended up putting down. Number three is, when they rescheduled the meeting for my day off, a white person told me that there was an example that the pretty much boss, the clerk, shared with the meeting about being pulled over by law enforcement, but he used donuts. I think this is an act of deception, because he used refreshments, donuts, to tell the story that he was headed toward the Mexican border or something like that. And he was borrowing a friend of his car, and they were pulled over and they had to go to jail. So he was talking about that and saying, I know how I can feel to be in a situation like that. And this is significant because he shared the same story about him interacting with law enforcement in the other building, because they have meetings on two consecutive Fridays. So I'm wondering, why did he share that story about law enforcement? I'm thinking, in my conclusion, that he was trying to talk about racism in a way, but that was his way of doing it. Next one is, I had a conversation today with a white female that was at the front counter, and she came over to our area talking about, did a certain person come over there? I guess it was what they call a problematic customer, and he was trying to petition for an adoption case or something. And the other white female coworker asked, was it a black person, white person? And she said it was black. So she was going into this detailed explanation, saying that, oh, he was causing trouble, and he's one of those sovereign citizens. I think that's, they put that in our policy. I was going to try to look that up. But so I asked him, like, how are we supposed to know when a person is what you say, a sovereign citizen? So she responds saying, well, when they start using vulgarity, saying the F-bomb and GD. So that was the only question I asked her. And I'm thinking, so if someone curses, that makes them a sovereign citizen. But I'm thinking that that's a racist code term or code word for a black person. So she walked off and went to the next apartment. I had another incident where I wore a certain color shirt, and I guess it's called the color mint. It's like a light green shirt. So I was trying to get the mail because I have to go across the whole office to pick up envelopes. And the white female, she says, oh, well, you look like a mint chocolate chip cookie. So I stood there and I was about to get the envelopes, and I just gave a nonverbal, I think it was like a slight smirk. So I said, I said something like, am I supposed to be thankful for that? And she was like, oh, well, you know, you just don't take it the wrong way. So I just asked her, did you have any mail? And she just said, no. And my last one is, there was a comment someone made about another female, white female, made it about a non-white female. So I was going up to the time clock to swipe to go home. And she was saying that, well, you know, it's going to be cold tonight, and you got to make sure you have your hot water running or whatever. And the non-white female, she says, well, you know, I have leaky pipes, so I should be okay. And it's a spigot in the backyard. And the white woman, after she leaves, she says, did you hear what she said in her response? And she was, and the black person said, what? And she says, yeah, she has leaky pipes, but she ain't just talking about her house. And, you know, all of the women start laughing. And I was like, is this something that we should be saying? Is this appropriate? Nobody answered me, so we all just went home. So, you know, I'm pretty much in a female-dominated workplace, and they say these type of things all the time. And that's all I have for now, and thanks for allowing me to share.
At the courthouse, no less, that this is regular conversation at the courthouse, not at the bar or the Playboy Bunny Ranch. Those types of moments, one, that might be one to, you know, log in the journal. And great question. Is this appropriate for the workplace? Now, imagine I'm here, mint chocolatey as I am, and I begin to make these sort of comments. Now, how are these white chicks going to respond if that became a regular pattern of behavior? Just, you know, putting that in perspective. Bill Cosby. The mint chocolate chip comment, like the mom that was talking about going on the trip to Japan. Great one, where you don't have to say anything. Also, always phenomenal when we can stay in the question lane. Should I be happy about looking like a mint chocolate chip? And see what they say. I've said before about not necessarily a uniform, but just in the workplace, like wearing the same outfit every day, like having the exact same shirt, like just buying six of them, exact same slacks, having like six of them. So you just wear the same thing. That way there is never a, you know, oh, look at that lavender shirt. And oh my goodness. And now chartreuse. That's what, same thing every day. That way that's less and less to chat about. That was something that I learned from a previous job. I would not wear anything that stood out in terms of clothing, where it almost looks like you wear the same bland outfit every day by design. The twins, wow, black misandry. Were these males, or did I hear that correctly with the twins, where it was they were about to be shackled under suspicion of brandishing firearms at the courthouse?
Yes, sir. And the suspected race soldier did it with the intent to get entertainment and laughter out of startling them. And they all started to laugh at their fearful response. Like, wait a minute, man, you trying to shoot me? And, you know, he said, just go on. You know, we're just joking. These are the people who are the so-called security and bailiffs at the front of the building. So the two brothers walk through and they say this, and then he said it, from what I hear, in an authoritative manner, of course, to bring about the fear and being afraid. So, yeah, they definitely weren't excited about that.
Deriving pleasure, entertainment, comedy from frightening, terrorizing black children, psychopathic racial personality and other essays, Dr. Bobby E. Wright. I think it's right to the core. What does it mean to be white? What does that classification mean? Deriving pleasure even from abusing, terrorizing children. That classification, when you were talking about the tragic arrangement situation and they said that they were going to go with the racial classification of the father, I've heard that both ways. I've heard sometimes they go with the mom, sometimes they go with the dad. Again, they, system of racism, white supremacy, whites generally are the ones who make that decision about how the child is going to be classified. Will that child be accepted as white, non-white? But I've heard that both. That's why I said that's such a fascinating place to work, to just get to what is it going to be today? Today, okay, it's going to be the dad today. Okay, see how long it stays that way. Is it this way? Consistent. That's such a fascinating environment to work in. I am sure the one where you were saying the white guy, where he kept giving the same story in multiple places about the interaction that he can relate, I guess, to some form of mistreatment because he was stopped by the police as well that time. I'm sure that was calculated, done to give whatever impact. I'd have to know the audience and other details, but I'm sure if he gave the exact same story twice that, yeah, that was done deliberately for whatever reason, trying to convince, oh yeah, I can empathize. I know what it's like. I have been there. Let's see. Other folks, if you have comments, questions, suggestions on anything that's been shared, number again, 641-715-3640, the code 564-943-pound. Press *61 if you would like to participate. If we have upgrades to the holiday code, definitely let us know. Folks, we've missed completely. If you have commentary, proceed.
May I be heard?
Yes, ma'am.
Yes, this is Miss TN. I was born and raised in Mississippi, currently residing in Tennessee. Just started a new job. Flew down to Texas for training. On my last day of training, the rep for our company decided to take me out to lunch. He was a white guy, and he said that he wanted to go to this taco place. And he said it was a very Southern taco place. And so we went to the taco place, and we placed our orders. And one of the taco, the number one item on the list was a trailer park trash taco. And I ordered that on the menu, and the lady asked me that I wanted make that taco extra trashy. I guess I had to add some sauce on it or something like that. But we placed our orders. He paid for both of us. And so when they brung our orders out to the table, they put it in one tray like we were a couple. So I thought that was pretty weird. Started freshening up on my policy and procedure manual. And in the manual, it stated, there will be no weapons allowed on the premises, anywhere on the property. And also in that manual, it said that they preserve the right to search your car, search your purse, pretty much search everything on you if you are on their properties. That's it. Thank you.
Wow. Now, who just on that last tidbit alone, if you didn't hear any other aspect of workplace racism, forget the first 2 hours. Let's just say we were talking, we were just name calling. That's all we did the first 2 hours. Just that last bit alone. Now, imagine you're on a job and you don't read your policy and procedure. You missed that part. And they don't tell you that in the, because they don't tell you everything that's in the policy and procedure in the training. I think that is rarely the case where they have a training that is that in depth, where they cover everything that's in the policy and procedure manual. So you take a job and they don't tell you that in the policy and procedure manual. And then today is the day that they say, oh, yeah, look here, Miss TN, ma'am, you said first time caller. We had lots of first time callers. Whoopee. You said Miss TN. Is that how you wanted to be referenced?
Yes, sir.
Right on. Today, Friday, 11:30. Today is the day that we're going to search your car. And what? What are you talking about? Going through my vehicle? Well, it's right here, page 59 of, and that's the way that they'll do it too. Like, oh, you didn't know this? It's right here on your policy and procedure that you signed back on June 1st of 2011 when you were employed here, that you did sign. And then they'll have that PDF style. They'll show it to you. There's your signature that you agreed to comply with any search of your person or vehicle, property. Why, as long as you're employed here. So if you want to keep that job, then car keys, and let's get to it. Now imagine that. Who wants to be in that position? Oh my, regardless of, you know, if I don't have anything in my car but toothpicks. But I mean, just the principle of the matter, that's the sort of thing you should know that before you take the job. Then no surprises, no problem. Let's go do it. Take the key. Well, I wouldn't say take the keys and do it yourself, but I mean, yeah, no problem. We're prepared. None of this is a shock to me. when you were describing the trashy taco, I'm generally not snobbish about food, but wow, I am so happy I am vegan. Woof! I can't even imagine what's on such a concoction. I'll have to look that up. That's odd about the placing of the items and all that. But anyway, if people have a code about how they do the lunch thing when we go out, I certainly, if Race Soldier wants to use their nickels to pay for anything, they've stolen everything, so whatever, fine. But if people have a code about how they conduct lunch, that would be helpful too. Just things that you have found over the years. If that is a part of your job where you know you're going to have to do lunches or dinners or whatever it is with whites, and you figured out these are some things that can help you get through that 45 minutes to an hour, that would be grand to hear as well. Let's see. Other folks, if we missed you completely, you have comments, questions, commentary, lines should be open. Proceed.
Gus, I have a quick question. For the female caller that sent the email about the 30-year-old who was found dead by her 7-year-old daughter, did she state how that woman died? And if not, if she does know, either way, if you know or don't know, could you kind of like send a follow-up email? I'm just curious. Was it like a heart attack, a stroke, an aneurysm, or, you know, what it was, if that's okay?
Thanks. She did. Yes, ma'am. She didn't include the details in terms of how, but I can see if she can maybe get details about what the specifics were, you know, that caused this. Racism, white supremacy.
Can I start?
Oh, yes, ma'am.
Well, I spoke before, but I have a follow-up that is, will just, to the last caller referencing reading the policy and procedure and getting fired. Or if you would like me to wait, I don't mind waiting.
Oh, let's hear it.
So this same son of mine, he had gotten a job. He has a great job now, but this is one of his jobs while he was in school, and he had a job at Costco, but he was working, it wasn't for Costco, it was the people who do the samples, you know, the ones in the Costco Sam. But this particular was at Costco. See, he got this job, he would go set up, do his little thing, and he was so excited. So this one particular day, I'll never forget, it was Mother's Day about 2 years ago. He was got to work and found out they were getting a raise. In fact, he took a picture of the memo that was above the clock in, and he sent it to me. That's why I definitely remember. He was so excited about this raise that he'll be getting $12 an hour. The company's called CDS. So he called me a few hours later, frantic. Mom, they're telling me to go home. And I said, well, what happened, son? He said, well, you know, I was setting up my table to go do out on the floor like I always do. Everybody gets, we can get drinks in a clear plastic cup. He said, so I got some Sprite like I had been doing all the previous times. And I always put paper over it because, you know, it's kind of out in the open. And I'm just standing there waiting to go out on the floor. A lady who has just promoted to a managerial position, a non-white black female, but she works for Costco, walked by. When she walked by, she looked down and saw my cup with the, I don't know if she saw him while he was getting the drink, but she walked by after he got the drink. Said nothing to him, went immediately to his supervisor, who was a non-black, non-white Asian woman, Cowbell, and spoke to her. A few seconds later, his supervisor comes out, very frantic. Oh, what are you doing? What are you doing? What do you have in your cup? And he's like, I got a drink. Well, what's the problem? What's in that cup? Only water, only water. And he says, only water? He's like totally confused. He sees everybody, CDS workers and Costco workers, getting Coke, Sprite, whatever soft drink they want. And No. So he calls me and he's all frantic. And I say, well, son, tell them, ask her about progressive discipline. You know, what do you mean? Go home. No. First he came, she told him to go home and write an email stating exactly what happened. So he comes home, he writes this email telling what happened, and he goes, you know, he's sulking. And the next day he looks, he says, Mom, they took me off the schedule. And I'm like, what? So I said, well, ask them about progressive discipline, like what is going on? And when she called, mind you, he said, I'll pay for the soda. It's, 59 or 79 cents. It's less than a dollar. She said, no, it was too late. You already took the item before paying. So, no, too late. You can't pay now. And, I mean, my son literally started crying tears because he was really excited about this job. Next thing you know, I said, well, ask her about progressive discipline, you know, a day or so later. She said, no, there's no progressive discipline when it comes to theft. So I'm like, oh, we're going to contact corporate. We're going to let them know how they're treating their employees. And I said to him, you know, send an email. Next thing you know, she calls him and she says the dreaded words. Oh, and by the way, it's in your employee handbook, only water. And he said, Mom, they never went over it in orientation. Even another young lady who was hired when he was orientation, when he did, said they never told us that. And at first she said, oh, yeah, I'll write a memo. I'll speak up for you. But, of course, when it came down to it, she wouldn't say anything as far as not to risk her job. And long story short, they fired him over a less than a dollar drink because he took the drink that wasn't water at Costco. Oh, and by the way, I said to him, why don't you go to the job? You know, go out there and talk to her because I find that people are different over the phone than when they have to look you face to face. He said, Mom, I'm a black man towering over this Asian woman. You really think that's going to go well? And I, honestly, Gus, that was really one of the first times I had to stop. And this is long before I found your program that I had to stop and said, son, you are absolutely right. That may not go well. So, yes. So now when my kids get these, you know, small jobs, minimum wage jobs, I always say, read your employee handbook. They don't. Ignorance is no excuse of the law. I'll mute my line.
Much obliged for sharing. So important. I wasn't told that either. You know, that's what I say. I think for younger people that listen to this program, it can be a real benefit. The workplace racism specifically, because I wasn't told that at a young age, and that would have greatly benefited me to hear, I think anybody, just read policy and procedure. And it puts you in a much better position on the job. Like it's beyond just, oh, okay, now I know what the rules are and all right, I'll make sure they have water or whatever it is. Now you can be much more observant in the workplace in terms of how I'm being treated, how everyone else is being treated, are the rules being followed at all. You can just be paying attention to that every day because you know what the policy and procedures are supposed to be. It's just, it's such a, I don't want to say powerful, but I think it puts you in a much better position for the workplace. You can be much more confident in how you are functioning in that environment when you know what the rules and regulations are and how they're supposed to be applied. And Dr. Curry, again, Black men are often associated with such negative stereotypes that any act of speech or demonstration of leadership is thought to be threatening. The Man Knot. Session 6 next Thursday. Finally getting it without error. Other folks have commentary that they want to share, workplace racism related. Codified, hold on 1 second, retired firefighter, codified software developer in Wisconsin. Did you have commentary?
Yes, Steph. I'm sorry I missed most of the program. Can I be heard?
Yes, ma'am.
Okay. Sorry I missed most of the program. But I know there's been a running theme lately of time off or requesting time off. And so I had a story to share regarding that. I decided to take off next Monday because it was my birthday and I didn't feel like dealing with the race soldiers on my birthday. I did not tell them it was my birthday. I just requested the time off. And my manager gave me the time off, but I've been doing this project for the lead architect who I've discussed on this program many times and who really is my boss. You know, my manager is just, he's doing all the paperwork, but this is the person that gives me all the work. And so I just happened to mention that I would be off because we're doing this huge project. And I knew we were doing this huge project, and I really didn't care. I really wanted that day off, so I requested it. And he gave me a look like, niggas don't get time off on the plantation. And I know that if he was in charge of a, approving these time off requests, I would not have gotten it. And then another story. So I think sometimes victims can get really caught up in this time of year, especially with the commercialism and the materialism of this time of year. And so I've been noticing something at my job lately. So maybe about a couple of weeks ago, there was this UPS truck parked in the parking lot of the building beside the building that I work at. And these two white guys were unhitching this trailer, and they said hello, and I said hello. And they unhitched this trailer, and they left it there. And I thought that was a little odd. And then I would start to see a car coming back and forth and getting packages and putting them in the back, in the trunk of this car. And then lately I've been seeing a non-white Black male, and now his car is the only car I see getting these packages. And they put a pod out here and everything. I guess the building is in between tenants. So they put a pod out here with all these UPS packages, and it looks really, really for lack of a better term, really incorrect. And so I just, you know, just thinking about, you know, the victims that usually take jobs around this time of year, maybe take seasonal jobs and everything, it's really easy to get caught up in this commercialism, but do not do things that would jeopardize the job that you have or even your safety or your freedom or quote-unquote freedom. things that will put you in greater confinement. Because I keep on seeing this black male, and it's becoming more apparent to me that they're sending this black male to do this now. You know, now I don't see these two white males. So that was all I had to share. Thanks so much for allowing me to share, and I'll mute my line.
Much obliged, codified software developer. That has been our theme for the day. Safety, and in all of the different forms with regards to the workplace, because they will do that. They will look for black people for the worst jobs, the most dangerous jobs, the most difficult jobs with the least pay and benefits and health and all of that. And oh yeah, this is nigger work. This is for you all. Get out there and get it done. You have to be responsible for your safety in the system of racism, white supremacy. And again, that's why we're talking about the black female that died at 30, trying to get more information just to see how she died from the person that wrote in that nothing, no job is worth your life. No job is worth your existence, your health and well-being in the system of racism, white supremacy. And that this system will do that a lot of times. They'll put us in those really difficult positions. We got offspring and bills and all this stuff and difficulty finding a job. So we'll just try to take what we can get. And sometimes that means, you know, having to compromise your health. And that's one that just, I mean, man, system of racism, white supremacy, once you start having to compromise your health, I mean, that can be everything right there. Other folks, commentary that they wanted to share, last less than 30 minutes left in the broadcast, so people should not be lollygagging or waiting until the last moment if you have commentary to share. Certainly, if we have any folks who have, I'm still waiting on an explanation, the horseplay rule. I know what horseplay is, very familiar. I have engaged in some tomfoolery myself, but the horseplay rule with regards to this sounds like official workplace policy. If anybody has heard of that or knows what that is, I would like to know. If folks, again, refinements to holiday code and or other workplace suggestions or problems, proceed.
Okay.
Yes, can I be heard?
Heard both of you. We will nab Stacy in the UK. It is actually Saturday, December 1, 3:37 a.m. For Stacy. And I got my yoga poster in the mail today. Much obliged.
No problem, bro. Hello to you and the rest of the callers. Gossip, did you call me through Skype? Because it didn't actually, it didn't ring. And I think it happened the same way on Saturday. So Sunday's global broadcast, so I didn't even realize, I didn't hear the call. But sorry, can I just check, did you actually call me?
I did. Right, okay. At about it would have been like 1 a.m. your time.
Okay, now I need to check my I need to check my laptop then, because I didn't hear it this time. So apologies, I've missed a lot of the broadcast. So I've missed some of the questions, but the horseplay rule, I've never heard that, and certainly over in the UK, and I would imagine in the US, horseplay is usually refers to something sexual. So that is very strange, unless it's just a simple code of not behaving, indulging in sexual related behaviour in a workplace, but I've never heard of it being called that before. I was thinking about your question last week, actually, about errors in the workplace. And I did mention a long time ago that I had been part of an investigation. It became very political, to be honest. I think it was more, I don't think there was necessarily as much wrong as there was a lot of politicking going on. So it resulted in a number of staff being pulled into an investigation, and I mean a police investigation. And that lasted for me, 18 months. Now, I wasn't a suspect, but it still meant, you know, being, feeling like I was a suspect, and the whole thing just lasting for an incredibly long period of time, and obviously very stressful. And in 2015, my unit was on away day, and I remember at the break time speaking to some colleagues about that experience, and I noticed the suspected racist aggressive director behind me, and I realised she was walking around just listening to people. Time I felt, oh my goodness. I mean, not that I actually had anything to hide, but it just made me feel very weird. Anyway, about a year later, my head of team, who always used to act as though she really wasn't interested in how finances were managed, even though she was the head of team, and to a degree played like she didn't understand the rules, because previously on one of the projects I was managing, she would intervene and inappropriately get into conversations with the provider of that service, and go around me. And so it ended up that we were in a meeting once and me having to sit there and explain exactly what the rules are and why what he was asking should not be done. Which was her being really inappropriate, because she should never have undermined me in that way. And I remembered leaving that meeting and her saying to me, oh, you're very knowledgeable on the financial procedures. And as we were walking back to the desks, I actually said to her, I actually don't know whether you're joking or not, which probably wasn't, you know, the best way to kind of respond to her, but it was just so bizarre to me. And it was one of those ones where you just made to feel slightly uncomfortable. And I thought, are you taking the pee or are you actually giving me a compliment? And somehow it just didn't feel like a compliment. So a year later, as I said, something came up and she was trying to undermine me. And she had assumed that I had not followed financial procedure on a particular project. And I had actually got permission to overspend on the project from her program manager. But she assumed I didn't. So she sent me an email at the end of the financial year claiming that she had no knowledge of XYZ. Plus, I had also secured funding from a sponsor for another project. And I think that was really the issue, that her nose was out of joint just because of that, because I think she was being asked to do similar things and couldn't produce. And so sent an email saying, I don't know why you've done this here. And also my understanding was that you had secured funding from a sponsor for this project. Now, I had never had that conversation with her. I had it with my manager at the time. So she was querying the amount. And I emailed and I copied in the program manager and made clear that actually I did have permission. This person agreed it. And my only mistake at that point was that I didn't have her written correspondence, which was very unlike me. I'd slipped off my own code, but she didn't actually deny it. And also, I'd said in the email back, I don't remember actually having a conversation with my head of team about the sponsorship, but actually correct that I did secure it, and the amount is such and such and such. And the reason why I'm sort of going through all of that detail is because when I went through the grievance process, and I won't go back through all of detail, but one of the issues I raised, and again I spoke about this on the phone, sorry, on this broadcast previously, was that one of the program director had tried to get me to pay a different supplier for work that they hadn't done. So in effect undermining me and causing me to potentially breach the company policy and financial procedure. And I'll go through the detail of this another time, but essentially the way that the grievance was handled, the chair at the time tried to make out as if it wasn't really that she was breaking the finance procedures. Now, I had already spoken to finance before raising it as an issue, because I knew, well, in fact, she told me we were breaching the financial procedures, so it would be an issue if the project was audited. Now, I already knew without her saying that it was inappropriate. I went and spoke to finance. Finance specifically said to me, do not pay. And so I raised that both in the grievance and then in the appeal. And he was trying to make out as if I was just, you know, making an issue out of nothing. It's just, you know, what we do at the end of the year. We move money around. And there is a difference between moving money around and breaching financial procedures and paying a provider for money, a company for work services that they didn't deliver, which I pulled to his attention, drew to his attention. And when I received the minutes of that session, they had somehow omitted to include that issue in the minutes. So I made sure it went back into the minutes of both the grievance and the appeal hearing. And they being the management and the people chairing the grievance and the appeal hearing. And the longest, the summation of this is that what I realised is that that conversation back in 2015, basically play the long game. She had overheard that conversation, had the director, and I could never prove it, so I didn't make the accusation in the appeal. Sorry, in the grievance or the appeal or anywhere else. But they were basically trying to set me up when I was being asked to pay that supplier. And I think they thought, well, there's probably been a history of her being pulled into something very sensitive about financial payments to a supplier in the past, and that somehow that could be used against me. Now, I had done no wrong, so it was never an issue for me. However, you know, any kind of issue they would twist and use. So as I said, I couldn't use it as a I couldn't actually make the direct accusation because I couldn't prove it that they were trying to set me up. But the way that it was minimized and basically covered up during that appeal hearing told me everything that I know. And my error was actually discussing the matter in the first place, because even though, as I said, I had not done anything wrong, doesn't mean to say a racist, somebody with an agenda, a suspected racist, whatever. And certainly that racist director has been confirmed because she'd been accused in the past, will take something and use it against you. And if you're not very careful and you do not have your wits about you, people can get you into very difficult positions. And I'll meet my line there, I guess.
White people love getting black people in those sort of vulnerable positions. Gotcha. The Negro did it. The Negro did it. We got him. We got him red-handed. The Negro did it. That reminded me, one of our callers in the D.C. area, the exact same scenario. Race soldier came to them, white woman, and says, hey, we got a supplier. Let's go ahead and take care of them. We'll go ahead and pay them for next month's shipment in advance, even though, you know, it's a month ahead of time. Let's go ahead and give them a few thousand advance. And she said, whoa, this is, you know, major violation of policy and procedure. That's, you know, I'm not going to do that. She says, oh, that's hogwash. Come on. Let's nothing. Let's do it. And it's exactly what Stacey said. Let me go verify with the other more powerful white people, or the white people specifically that do the finances. Is this what we are supposed to do? Is this according to policy and procedure where we can pay vendors a month in advance? It's absolutely not. Thank you kindly. And they move forward. Never happened again. But exactly what you heard from Stacey, the long game, where this started in 2015, to see perhaps if we can get a setup here, like the conniving, even the caller in Florida who was talking about the white woman who would come to the courthouse and wear the same clothes to see if she could get someone to respond. That's what I mean about the work that just whites in general, that level of manipulation and calculation to try to set people up so that you can bang up. Oh, gotcha red-handed. Yep. You violate. It's right here. See page 55, section C. You violate. Yep. Gotcha. Going to have to terminate you. Sorry. You broke the rule. We got rules. Got to have rules and regulations. That's policy and procedure, and just using counter-racist logic along with, I have great suspicion about whites. Even if they say that they're come bearing gifts, I'm going to have to say, what did I say about the chocolates? With the error, I think a lot of times, I said that earlier as well, a lot of times we end up saying things when nothing need be said, which I think that's exactly what you realize, that we had talked about that a lot this evening as well, that frequently nothing, that is the best thing to say. We do not need to respond to every tacky comment that racists make. Frequently, that is a part of the setup right there for them to say something tacky to get us to respond. And then whammo, got you again. Or we can write you up. And oh, that was so, I can't believe that you said that. That was so unprofessional and niggardly for you to make a comment like that in the workplace. Other folks have commentary that they, the male caller who yielded for Stacy. Did you have commentary, sir?
Yes. I just wanted to comment, give some suggestions. Like I said earlier, up here in Michigan, they do that a lot. I had a lot of experiences with terminations. I do remember seeing the horseplay and a lot of those rules and policies, but it's usually just horseplay in quotation marks. It just say like, nope, no horseplay. And then on to the next rule. I found that the best thing that worked for me was in finding a way to be able to save like 80% of my income, you know. I had to read a lot, like I said earlier. Really, all the nine areas of people activity where they attack us, that's where I had to attack with getting myself informed, you know, in all those areas. That helped me to do things like get my license without hiring a lawyer, fight cases, because law, politics, knowing about the driver responsibility fees, and how those was, you know, targeted to us. So moving different, just like that was the best thing. Just finding the way that I can save, you know, 80% to my income. That changed it up a whole lot from that despair, because I knew that I would be getting moved around for some reason or terminated for some reason. But because I had saved so much of my income, I had did it. This was, I believe, in like 2010. Yeah, like 2010 when I first did it. And I walked out the job with like $8,000. You know, just from save from there. And that helped me out a lot, because it's like, okay, I know I'm gonna be shipped around, but I got enough money to pay my income for, you know, 6-8 months, you know, my rent, whatever, if I do get fired or whatnot. And it's like, once you become more like, I'm gonna say, self-employed, it just freed me up. And I was still dealing with, I still had jobs, because I would build relationships with people in the job, and, you know, like Bluetooth headphones, whatever, you know, selling products, and, you know, building relationships. So I wound up keeping a lot of relationships with people for years, like still know people from 2012, you know, still got my number in their phone, you know, and now I'm in stocks, you know, trading Forex. But it's like that freed me up a whole lot. It was like I have five jobs this year alone, you know, but I'm not there for the money, you know. I'm straight, you know, I'm good. Family don't want for nothing. Know I'm gonna go through these things at the job, but knowing that I'm not risking my life no more. Because back then in 2012, I was 24, owned my own house, ignorant. You know, I was working jobs after job after job, almost blacking out, like shouldn't have no that type of bad health from it, that type of stress at that young age, dealing with all that, you know, as a youngin. And once I got that concept of being able to save my income, you know, and more budgeting with my money, like I said, I would go through all type of races, you know, terminations and things. I know, you know, this is just like flat out race. You know, this is BS what they fired me for. It don't matter no more, you know. I mean, not to say it don't matter, but it matters less now because, you know, now it's 2018 and been practicing that since like 2012. And like, it just free you up. You just know, like, okay, you know, I had situations then when I walked into jobs, and because I was able to, you know, have my income saved up, I'm not doing this. You know, I'm knowing this is dangerous. You know what I'm saying? I'm knowing this about to be some BS, or, you know, no, I'm not doing this. I'm about to go find something else. You know, and I think that's the best suggestion I could offer from being on multiple plantations throughout my life. And I don't want to leave the callers with like despair, just offer some sort of solution, you know, and that's the one that worked best for me. And I'll mute my line.
Much obliged, caller in Detroit. I endorse that completely in saving. Mr. Fuller talked about that as well, getting a savings habit. Save, save, save. We do not need to be out shopping and buying every trinket and gadget for the so-called holidays or anything else, really, to really just be saving and just keeping in mind that war is being waged against us, and racists, they have long-range plans to cause us problems. They're not thinking 2018. They're thinking, what problems are we going to cause them for 2020, 2030, 2050? That's the way that they're thinking. They already, 2018 plans are moldy. They had that, you know, written up a long time ago. With that, we did Workplace Racism for this week. We should be back next Friday, 8 p.m. Eastern, 5 p.m. Pacific. Safety, that was our theme for today. I cannot stress that enough. Nobody is going, really, to put it bluntly, sometimes if you are not concerned about your safety in the workplace, nobody will be. In terms of what types of jobs you take, how long you're on those jobs, how you're treated on those jobs, nobody. That very well may be the case in the system of white supremacy. Even if you work on a job and there's no whites present, you might be the only person who is concerned about your safety, health, and well-being on the job. Take whatever safety precautions you deem necessary in the work. Zig when he should have zagged. That's what they said at the beginning. This was a white man who was killed on the job. Truck ran over him, and they said he zigged when he should have zagged. And that's what they said about a white man. So you can imagine how they will regard the safety and well-being of a Negro in the system of white supremacy. Much obliged for everyone's contributions. I hope it has been a constructive investment of your
Friday evening dash Saturday morning. We'll be here tomorrow for the compensatory call-in, 9 p.m. Eastern, 8 p.m. Central, 6 p.m. Pacific. We'll catch up on what has gone down the last 7 days or so. Again, sobriety would be best under conditions of white terrorism. Certainly, if any of these tacky office parties or anything, if you have to go, sobriety. You want to be cognizant of everything that is happening around you. If you need to pull out your recorder or anything else, safety for the 30 minutes that you're going to be there. Brief period. It is going to be a brief, sober experience if you have to be at the office party. In addition to being sober, we're certainly going to be buckled. If we have to be in a vehicle, driver or passenger, it is the horror day season and the sobriety checkpoints. They will be out, particularly in areas where dark people reside. Let's try to do everything that we can to minimize contact with race soldiers, badge or no. That's it. Creator, we ask that you help us remain patient with other black people, victims of white supremacy. We ask that you help us remain patient with ourselves. Remind us to demonstrate the highest levels of black self-respect at all times, in all places, each and every time we are in contact with another black person. It has been time. Replace white supremacy with justice immediately. Cow signing out. Thanks all for tuning in.
Nigga, you so brainwashed.
I'm a victim,
your
brother.
Problem. You're a victim.
Man, I'm a victim of 400 years of conditioning.
Shut up.
The man has programmed my conditioning. Mm-hmm. Even my conditioning has been conditioned.